Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find me on Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And thank you very much for coming to the show. And you can follow the show simply by going to Blog Talk Radio and going to the follow button at the underneath the icon. And you can also find me on Facebook, find Bard's Logic Political Talk on Facebook, because there is a Facebook page and a group for you to join. Please check that out. And there's also the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, where you can find links and other good things on there as well. The Get Involved page, a gift page, and also a way to contact me, the host, by going to the contact section of the website. Now, tonight we will have a special guest on with us, and that would be James Naber, who will talk about the overpasses for Obama's impeachment, and we will discuss Obama's seven deadly sins against Americans and the Constitution and the movement to impeach him. About Mr. Neighbors, he understands that the key to removing Obama is pressure on Congress, hence the reason for all states having local organization. With protests in all 50 states, members of Congress would see their local voters representing their desires for Congress to act and remove Barack Obama through impeachment or losing face for the re-election bid. In just weeks, the overpasses has grown from a singular vision of Mr. Neighbors and swelled to numbers nearing 20,000. On August 6th of this year will be the first national event. Neighbors understands, though, that the first national Patriot wave is just a precursor to a larger freedom rallies that will have to take place across America. He expects that once the word is spread across the nation, the overpasses numbers will swell into the millions, and calls on all Americans to raise the bar from the protests in Egypt. A neighbor sees the movement moving beyond the removal of Obama from the White House to organizing recall efforts for politicians in Washington, D.C., who have forsaken their oath of office. His long-term goal is to have a watchdog organization that monitors the political affairs in our federal government to ensure that America never again slips into rule by decree, as seen by Barack Obama, aggressive political movement actions. And so what we will do is we will begin by playing an clip from a Tea Party meeting that I attended last night. And this will describe the first of the sins of Barack Obama about Obamacare and Obamacare and religious freedom.
House refused to give them more money. Sebelius, the head of HHS, decided that one way to get money was to go to the companies that are impacted by Obamacare and demand that they donate money to Obamacare. That came out in all places of the Washington Post, which is not exactly known as a conservative paper. I think the most telling comment was after they mentioned what Catherine Sebelius had been doing as far as extorting money from people that she regulates, was that the administration is in a frenzy to start the program precisely because it is a hopeless mess. If Obamacare stalls now, the The Obama team reasons it may never get going again. It's not like anyone other than the Obama team wants it in the first place. That in and of itself should tell you all about you need to know about Obamacare. So that's kind of what was going on about 2 months ago. This was back in May. And again, from the Washington Post, a fairly liberal paper. Religious freedom aspect. I know this was really hot when it first happened, and somehow it's been dying. It has not gone away. One of the other things that Catherine Sebelius has been doing is attacking the church. So basically, she is saying that all employers must provide for free contraception, including drugs that cause abortions. So that's mandated. Their workaround for that was to say, if the employer doesn't want to pay for it, and you are a religious organization, which is now being defined by IRS rules, and we know how friendly that could have been to us, that if the IRS calls you a religious organization, nonprofit, then your alternative for the contraception order is that the insurance company will provide them for free. How many people think that companies are in business to provide things for free? Everything affects the price. It's a make-believe rule. They are not providing exceptions. The most notable company going after them for this is Hobby Lobby. And prior to this, I've never shopped there. I'll go there for anything and everything they sell now. Hobby Lobby has opposed them all across the board, and the last two cases, they have won both of them. So after you get done with your Chick-fil-A for their stand, go over to Hobby Lobby and shop there. I was just there today, that's why I said that. The third thing with Obamacare, which far and away is the only word I can think of is egregious, and you'll have to look it up, but Obama decided that Obamacare is such a wonderful thing that if it is to go in effect before the election, we'll get creamed. So he's now delayed the mandate for employers until after the 2014 elections. That's how great Obamacare is. He's terrified he's going to lose everything. Now, when I first heard that he was delaying the mandate, it's like, oh, that's great news. But the second thing you immediately think of is, what right does he have to select which part of the law he's going to abide by and which part of the law he's going to forgive and change? There is nothing in the Constitution that says the president is free to change the laws he doesn't like. This is like the fourth time that this president has done that, where he said, I'm not going to enforce a law, or I'm going to change a law, or if Congress won't do it, I will. There's no basis for that. That's about as illegal as you can get. And it's just so blatant that if Obamacare is such a fantastic deal, why in the world are you worried about the elections? It should win you every election. Obviously not. The second issue that's kind of being hammered.
Okay, folks, and we will move on to the second deadly sin for Barack Obama. But before I do so, I will be bringing in our special guest tonight, and that will be James Neighbor. Thank you very much, Mr. Neighbors, for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you very much for coming to the show. So if you'd like to make some comment about what we talked about and what we heard from the first clip, which the first deadly sin of Obama is the Obamacare. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the fact of the matter is that while Obama was purportedly to be a constitutional professor, which would indicate that he has full awareness of the workings of the Constitution, the fact that Obamacare has been deemed a tax bill or a tax law now that it's in effect, and the fact that according to the Constitution, a tax bill cannot originate in the Senate, but yet he signed it into existence anyway. He knowingly committed an unconstitutional act. Add on to Obamacare the fact that the vast majority of Americans will go from being full-time workers to part-time paupers and peasants to the ruling class in D.C. who are trying to be made exempt from Obamacare, Well, it states very clearly what their agenda is with that. They're attempting to remove any ability of American citizens to stand up for themselves, because the only thing that they will be able to worry about is where the next meal is coming from. They won't have the cash to do anything, to go travel. Their vacations will be, you know, taking time off from work will become non-existent. And as I said, he is supposedly a constitutional professor, so one could clearly state that with that knowledge and education, he knew exactly what he was doing and what he was setting upon the American people.
Exactly. That's one of the things, that we talked about as well, you know, all this on subsequent shows. But before I continue onward, I do want to give a special thank you to Holly Norris, and she is the one who kind of pointed me in your direction, Mr. Neighbors. She told me a little bit about it and about you, and also one of the shows that I listened to that you were on here on Blog Talk Radio. So thank you very much, Holly, for pointing Mr. Neighbors here out to me. I appreciate it. So what I'll do here is, we got the second one, because I want to move on through the seven deadly sins of Obama, so we can get more information, more detail on your Oprah passes for the impeachment of Obama. And so this next clip from the Tea Party meeting was Obama and his treatment of the First Amendment.
Freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom to assemble. The HHS mandate is already an attack on religion. Clearly, we have to be sensitive to all religions as long as they're Muslim. Any other one, we can do whatever we want to them. Freedom of the press is basically gone. The Department of Justice, Eric Holder, went after the Associated Press. He tapped their phones. He went after their email. The Fox News gentleman, he went after his parents' phones and his parents' email. And he went before Congress and said, I have no idea who would do such a thing. And 2 weeks later, they found that the order to do it had his signature on it. That's called perjury. That's called go to jail, go directly to jail, do not pass go. That's just the first of two times he's done this. Freedom of speech is obviously on its way out. The IRS thing is entirely about stopping conservative organizations from getting involved at all in the 2012 election. I just find it phenomenal that they're trying to stop this thing. And it's very clear it was 100% of all Tea Party and Liberty groups, and not a single group was approved until after the 2012 election was over. I think that says everything. Statistics can't lie that much. In addition to the IRS and their fund, the NSA has now been exposed as going after just about anything that's electronic, which means everything. Your cell phone, your email, all of that's visible to them. They've got agreements with Verizon, Google, Microsoft. They read everybody's mail. They can look at whatever they want. Now, part of that was authorized by the Patriot Act. Part of this was exposed by another illegal act, Snowden, who's now partying over in Russia at the airport. There's several ways to look at that, but I know when I signed my security clearance, it was 10 years of Leavenworth if you did something like that, so I have no sympathy. But the NSA is definitely going all over the place. And if it were not for all of these scandals happening at the same time, you might be able to say, okay, I'll trust that the government's going to protect my data and only come after me for things that have to do with terrorism. But given the IRS and the Department of Justice, I'm not sure any of us could trust that the NSA's information is going to stay within there. I wouldn't trust them with anything.
Okay, well, that's the clip there about the First Amendment. What do you think, James?
Well, the fact that they have allowed no free speech zones within a certain distance of the Secret Service, which, of course, will be within a certain distance of the president, should say quite a volume of his opinion of the First Amendment. Added on to that, the attacks on the press. Joe Biden is as guilty of it as any by delaying and just simply ignoring press members when they want to speak to them. the Rosengate scandal that happened when Eric Holder basically went judge shopping to find a judge that would be complicit in approving a warrant against Holder against Rosen, that Holder himself said was never intended to use to arrest him. Well, if that's the case, then why, other than intimidation and spying, would you even need a warrant for anybody? It boils down to control of anyone and everyone possible that would speak out against him. The fact that Rosen was doing an investigation, you know, into things that led to all things Obama, and was, well, you know, and had that happen, it reeks of Stalin era tactics and suppression of the voice of the people. The fact that the AP were tapped and monitored by the hundreds, it's sickening. It's absolutely sickening. I mean, in no other time in the history of our nation, no other time, and in no other administration, not even in World War II, was the media censored and attacked and controlled like they are now. It's almost as if the mainstream media has become the Bureau of Propaganda for the Obama White House, and if any of them, such as Rosen, dare step outside the parameters as defined by the administration, then they will be persecuted, they will be tracked, they will be watched, and then they will be hunted. And that's unacceptable in America. That's absolutely unacceptable. And for anybody to say that they didn't know about it when they find their signature on it is absolutely perjury. Absolutely perjury. Why Eric Holder is not currently sitting in a cell awaiting prosecution, I don't have the answer for that.
Yeah, and one of the other ways that they're going to, you talk about control over the people through controlling, you know, what can be said, and for those who do speak out, targeting them, and we'll cover another one of those later in these seven deadly sins. Another way that they'll have control over us is by taking our guns away or controlling them as much as they possibly can. And that what leads us to the third deadly sin of Obama, which we're hoping could lead him to impeachment, is the way that he is handling the Second Amendment. And so this will be the third deadly sin here, a clip I've got from the Tea Party meeting.
With and have been doing everything they can to try and suppress. To give you some better insight and comments on that, I've asked Tom Wood to speak. He's my concealed carry instructor. He's got 40-something years experience with this, and he has a much more seasoned perspective on some of this. Tom?
Good evening. Well, what's interesting is, in 9 years of doing this class, we have seen such an evolution in the populace. Let alone this stuff. I'm going to kind of talk a little bit before that and tell me when to leave. The last 2 years, I ask every gun class that we do, did you ever think you'd be sitting in a class to carry a concealed firearm? Raise your hand. No one raises their hand. The other thing that's interesting is that the crowd is becoming much more mature, such as this crowd. We have trained up to 86 years old. When Shirley came, Shirley shot an unbelievable target, then got her Mini Cooper and drove home. The guys gave her a standing ovation. But it's something that we kind of look at that's now becoming a daily part of everybody's home situation. Folks are kind of trapped in neighborhoods and things that are changing, and they feel an unsafe situation. But we kind of explain to them that carrying concealed is like having a homeowner's policy, an insurance policy. We want to use it as a last resort. And people don't realize that they are the weapon. They themselves are the weapon. And We give you so many tools to use. How many things do we have in our life that we must have, but we hope we never have to use? Our insurance, our fire extinguishers, our smoke detectors, our seat belts, and my favorite, the spare tire. You know, these are all things that we hope we never have to use. But getting down to what George has got here, I think that people in this group tells us, the growth and the participation, that people are getting their heads out of the sand and realize all of these additions to these laws that are being submitted. This first one, Fast and Furious. The current administration released an amount of, quote, assault guns, AR-15, semi-automatic. If you don't know what that means every time you want it to fire, you have to go like this. It's not a full automatic gun, which a single pull goes bah, 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 bah. There has never been an illegal crime with a fully registered legal machine gun in the United States. Never. That's an interesting fact. But the government released these things, immediately lost control of them, and I'm wondering if somebody and myself decide to rob a bank, are we going to leave our AK-47 at the scene when we leave? So do you think maybe that was trying to put a shadow on the AK-47? The incident where somebody shot a mile and a half to 2 miles away from the White House and shot a wind out. AK-47s don't shoot that far. They're not that accurate. These are things they try to bring the public in and put a dark shadow on these kind of firearms. But a lot of people don't realize they're your hobby. They're great investments, they're fun, they're stress relievers, and you can go out and have a great time with them. I'll go down here to the small arms treaty. For the last 8 to 10 years, it's come up into government that the UN wants our firearms, the sleeping giant, the citizen of the United States. Many years ago in World War II, one of the Japanese emperors said, fear the sleeping giant in the United States. You know who that was? You. The American hunter, the American gun owner. And that's the sleeping giant. I have never been to New York to see this. Maybe some of you have, but they tell me in front of the UN building in New York City is a bronze statue of a revolver with a knot in the barrel. That's what this is all about. They want the UN to come in and regulate the fact that you can personally own any kind of firearm. The Zimmerman thing, we've all heard about it. George and I talked about it a little bit. It wasn't a stand-your-ground situation. It was self-defense. In Ohio, you have the duty to retreat. If you can leave a situation, you must leave. And I think we would all do that. We don't want to take a life. We don't want to shoot a gun. And as George said, I was a policeman in Cincinnati for a very long time, but I've carried a gun in a civilian situation for more than 44 years. I've never had to use it. I've taken a stance, but I've never had to draw a firearm because of training, because of being aware and alert, and the fact it's my spare tire. I don't hope I never have to use it. And that's the consensus of a carry concealed permit. A lot of people think, oh, you get that gunman, you're going to draw it, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. It actually takes an A-plus personality and will make you step back. You win, I walk away. I've trained a number of people in this room, and I think they can confirm what I've said. But this thing, unfortunately, all the politics got into it, and it's just such a shame because it's blown it out of complete proportion. Any questions
from anybody? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, folks, I know that's a little bit of a longer clip, but I just wanted to make sure I got that all in there. And so I'll turn it over to you, James, and get some comments on you on that.
You bet. The fact of the matter is that the federal government, their job, especially the members of Congress, nothing in their job description has anything to do with gun control. Absolutely, if anything, their job description, the oath they took to uphold and defend the Constitution and the Second Amendment clearly states that we have the right to bear arms. any gun control legislation signed on by any member of Congress is a violation of their oath of office. And they should, I wish there were laws to where if a congressperson were to violate their oath of office, they would have voided their oath of their office at that point. If such laws were in place, we wouldn't have these shenanigans, which again boil down to control. If the American population cannot defend themselves, then we are helpless to stop what appears to be an oncoming police state. Even the Chinese earlier this year, in one of their state-run newspapers, called for the disarming of the American public. And one has to wonder, when a foreign nation to whom we are greatly in debt calls for the disarming of the American people, well, what exactly is in their agenda? Are they, we really have to wonder. They have the largest standing army in the entire world. If the American population were disarmed, would we become the Western Hemisphere version of China? I mean, who's to say? It's speculation. But nevertheless, when a nation over in that part of the world has that, the largest standing army, in the world, in the history of the world, calls for the disarmament of the American population, and they're being supported by the likes of Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Hussein Obama, Harry Reid, and the list goes on and on. What exactly is that agenda? Well, the agenda is clear. It's control, and it's control of the people by removing our last guardian of the United States Constitution, because if we are not allowed to defend the Constitution, and unfortunately, if we are not allowed to go to the last resort and defend the United States by the people rising up in arms, and then there is no hope for America. And the Founding Fathers made it clear in the Federalist Papers, written by the Founding Fathers, in commentary on why they made the Constitution as they did, that the purpose of an armed population was to ensure that the freedom of the American people would continue regardless of the acts of the government.
Right. Right, and that's, for the Second Amendment, one of the main purposes of the Second Amendment was to protect the people and have them armed, not so much for, invasion, but from the government itself.
Well, exactly, because, as the saying goes, power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when the American population is disarmed, there will be nothing but absolute corruption, because there will be no teeth to our voice. We peacefully protest, and that is to stop what appears to be a powder keg with a fuse that's burning short in this country. And that is to bring about change before it comes to the final measure of the American people standing up. I mean, I hope that never happens. I hope that never happens. But the fact of the matter is, the people in America they will not stand by for things like that. And there's no point if the people in Congress and President Obama actually loved this country, if they didn't have some insane lust for control of the people to put themselves in a position of unremovable elite status. If they didn't have a desire for that, they would have absolutely no desire whatsoever to push gun control through Congress. None.
Yeah, and then you take all the things we've talked about so far tonight, Obamacare, the way they're handling the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, there's definitely a theme there, and the theme is to weaken the citizenry of the United States. It's to weaken us, as you mentioned earlier. We're going to be so busy, a lot of us, so busy working, are sometimes two jobs in order to make ends meet that we don't have enough time to pay attention to what the government's doing to us. And then for those who are actually able to pay attention, they'll be disarmed so that they are weakened as well and cannot fight back against, you know, what the government's trying to do to the people. And, you know, which brings us to the fourth one when we talk about guns, is for those who could have used some guns to help them out over there in Benghazi. And this is the fourth deadly sin that could bring about the impeachment of Obama. Of course, you know, someone mentioned earlier tonight, I'll bring this up on Facebook, and they said, of course, that's one of the reasons why we bring this up, and you'll talk about this later on tonight, James, is to, you know, strengthen, you know, Congress resolve to get ahead and get him out. And also something that's even very important is, you know, changing the dynamic there in the Senate, in which there will be enough opposition to actually go through an impeachment process. Of course, the way the Senate is now, and the Democrat control, it'll never happen. And one of those things that's important for people to pay attention to is also the upcoming RNC meeting that is coming up next month. I believe it's the 14th to the 16th, and people can hear more about that in the archives here on Blog Talk Radio, and that's what we covered last week. But bringing it back to this show, the fourth deadly sin here of Obama that I am talking about is Benghazi.
This appointing scandal of all of them is what happened a year ago on September 11th. A year ago on September 11th, in Benghazi, Libya, the al-Qaeda group there organized an attack, killed an ambassador, killed two former SEALs and a CIA guy. So four people were killed. The administration was running for election then. September is not too far away from the start of voting in October, so it was only a month and a half out. And so they could not afford to have a terrorist action happen while they're on the campaign trail saying they won the war on terror. In fact, one of the conspiracy theories, and I hate to say that, is that the whole reason this attack was allowed to occur was because they were only supposed to kidnap him, not kill him, and then Obama was going to get his release negotiated and look like the hero. Well, that's not what happened. It got out of control. They burned the place down. They killed him. And then, when it came time to tell the world about it, instead of saying, hey, this Libyan embassy, it's not a full embassy, but the consulate, was asking for help for months and months and months. They made several calls during the attack asking for help. There were people in the area to help them. This was clearly a terrorist action. Instead, the State Department took what the CIA had written that was basically saying what I just said and said, we can't say terrorist, we can't say al-Qaeda. What we're going to do is we're going to say it was a video that was on the internet that caused all of this to happen. They went on every channel on Sunday, Susan Rice, and said there was a spontaneous riot caused by a YouTube video that was organized and killed people and overtook SEALs. Spontaneous. We now know that that was a total and bogus lie. We now have the email trail that says it was the Obama State House or State Department that changed the writings to lie about what really happened. And oh, by the way, the reward for Susan Rice lying to everyone on Sunday is she is now the National Security Advisor. So the person who perpetrated this lie was rewarded. Not that different than what's happening with Lois Lerner. So someone died. It's the first ambassador killed in decades, and we stood by and lied about it. As far as I know, the Senate Judicial and the House committees that are looking into this have got nowhere. They've just been stonewalled. It's not going even as well as the IRS hearings, which are slow and painful. It's if you're looking for a reason to call Rob Portman or Steve Shabbat or Brad Winstrup, this is probably the most fundamental thing that is just indicative of what's happening in the White House and should not be allowed to occur. I've come to hate this topic. The IRS.
Okay, we'll move on to the fifth one later if we get some comments from our guest tonight. But I do have someone I want to let in because I have not heard from him for quite some time, and I don't know how much time he's able to stay with us this evening. And for all those who are regular listeners here to Bard's Logic Political Talk, the person I'm going to let on here soon. He has been a panelist here on Bard's Logic Political Talk, as well as helped produce some shows for us, and is also the author of The Hidden Fourth Branch with the website of the same name. And that is Kelly Mordecai. Thank you very much, Kelly, for coming on to the show. Someone we've grown to know and love. Thank you very much, Kelly. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I've been sorry, I haven't done a show in a while. We're trying to gold mine like crazy. We had a window to do suction dredging, and then the water ran out, and then the Enviros passed a law. No more suction dredging. So the Golden State, California, in a bad economy, made the stupid decision that fishies are more important than people in a terrible economy. So anyway, I've kind of disappeared for a while, but I'm glad to be back. I like your host or your guest. And, I quickly want to go back to the Second Amendment and just a quick plug for the full Second Amendment. The Second Amendment reads, a well-regulated, keyword here is well-regulated, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state and the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And if you look at a historical point of why were the states allowed to have a militia, it's real simple. They knew that a king or a president or a federal government can become so strong that the only way you could hold them to account, ultimately, of course, was with your arms, but secondly, to a well-organized group of people called the militia. And the key word is well-regulated, well-disciplined, orderly, elected locally. And we have lost that, setting ourselves up for a lot of problems. There are organizations right now, some trying to do it legally, some trying to do it, well, they just get together and they call themselves community security associations. There's one in Southern Oregon happening. But, you know, that was one of our, you know, and we got serious, serious problems with not just gun confiscation, but, you know, years ago in the county I live here in Northern California, Siskiyou County, years and years ago in the 80s, they filed with the state to form their own militia. 800 people showed up. This is a small county. It's large in area, but small in people. And the feds showed up and scared it, and pretty much that was the end of it. So, you know, it's very concerning that this great institution, if you will, that had worked for hundreds of years, you know, going back to the 1600s, 1800s, until 1906, the Stupid Dick Act, that was the name of it. The guy's name was Richard. Anyway, we are getting toppled left and right and getting set up for a big fall. And I just wanted to get your guest's comments on the full Second Amendment.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I mean, you know, that the fact is you're absolutely right. You know, in the Federalist Papers, I mean, the Founding Fathers even went into to define the militias as, you know, organized, you know, well-regulated, organized, and unorganized. You know, the unorganized militia was the common man that, you know, had a firearm, and they expected that every person in America would always have one for exactly what we're facing today. And the fact that the federal government is going around and intimidating people, such as what you just laid out, in the example you laid out, it reeks of tyranny in the waiting. I mean, the fact that that people are being intimidated to exercise their constitutional rights is just simply intolerable. The fact that we put up with it for so long, I can only attribute to the mainstream media lying to the general public. And I mean, purporting stories that have occurred and blowing them out of proportion and just outright making up lies. One example is recently in Sandy Hook, when the local police stated that the Bushmaster was not used at all in any way, shape, nor form in the shooting that occurred there. It was found in the trunk of the car, but yet somehow when the state police took over, suddenly that was the only firearm that was used. And that's very contradictory
theme we have going on there between the two police forces, and it makes you wonder what exactly is going on. I mean, to be honest, the whole story was just hushed up shortly after that, and the official party line was what everybody's been told.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, here's an interesting situation. You know, the Sandy Hook shooting. Sheriff Arperio in Arizona, he's got like 30,000 people in his deputized squad, if you will, you know, called a Sheriff Arpaio's militia, and they started volunteering to stand as security in schools. I mean, what a great example of what men can do, volunteer their time. Hey, I'm with the sheriff, I checked in, I don't have a felony, and I'm, you know, basically here to protect the people. You get Hurricane Sandy was another situation where instead of the feds coming in, you know, and there was one block of residents that they weren't allowing into their homes. In during Katrina, they were just going through and grabbing guns. Now, you got local boys who were well-regulated, well-disciplined, elected. That kind of stuff ain't going to happen, and locally they can take care of their own problems. I mean, it gets pretty scary when you got somebody from another state or even, who knows, another country someday coming in and supposedly, we're here to provide security, oh, give us your guns. I mean, that won't fly with a local system, and the way it was set up, you know, local people know local people who know, who trust, you know, in a small town. We have taken away a lot of accountability and necessary help and aid that our founders knew full well.
And speaking of local, because I do want to move on through these, because I definitely want to get to the movement that you've got going, James, for the impeachment of Obama. So we'll move on. Is I'm going to talk about as I meant locally, because it's kind of started here where I'm at, is the IRS targeting of certain individuals and of conservative and Tea Party organizations, not giving them their status for being nonprofits. And so this will be the fifth deadly sin of Barack Obama. And this is kind of a longer clip, folks, because this was a local Tea Party meeting that I got the clips from, and of course, so they had more to say about it because it started here. But I think it's well worth the listen. So the fifth deadly sin of Obama, the IRS targeting.
One of those people was Elizabeth Hoffacher, who testified before the House Oversight Committee on Thursday. She quit her job there because Washington would not let her do her job. So her job was, she was in charge of all Tea Party Patriot and 912 applications for 501c4. That was her job. So she is the person they're talking about as the renegade. Her first set of letters out, and this is what I've come to understand after reading all of these crazy documents. The first set of letters that came from the IRS to the conservative groups were asking about things like political activity, and how much time you spend, and how many times you campaigned, and who you endorsed. Appropriate questions, you could say. We now know those questions came from the Cincinnati office. However, they were immediately followed up by a second set of questions that had things like, tell us your donors, who comes to your meetings, who speaks to your meetings. They wanted all of your names and social security numbers. They wanted to know anybody that we do business with, because they wanted to attack those businesses. They wanted to know if you've had any relationships with Justin Bennett Thomas, an individual who lives up in Deer Park, of all places. And they also wanted to know, please provide for us a description of the content of your members' prayers. That was in one of the organizations, I think it was the St. Xavier organization. That's what they got. And it's clear now from the testimony on Thursday that those questions came from Washington, D.C. And oh, by the way, the individual who first had to deal with the Cincinnati agent, he also was removed from the job because he had been doing it for 42 years and had never seen anything like this. Everything he did was second-guessed. He was given two groups to look out. He approved one and disapproved the other. The recommendation he had made was rejected by his higher-ups. And what he did was suddenly pushed all the way up to the IRS chief counsel in Washington, D.C. Why is that significant? There are only two people who are appointed by Obama in the IRS. One is the head of the IRS, the second is the chief counsel. They finally have the connection that takes this thing all the way up to the White House. It has not been reported anywhere except Fox News. Nowhere. And the head Democrat on the committee is a guy named Cummings, Representative Cummings. He's trying to say that since the White House didn't call Cincinnati, that obviously there's no connection and we're all done here, nothing to see, let's move on. And if you watched any of that hearing, unfortunately, since I had to talk on Fox News afterwards, I had to watch all 4 hours of it. I'll never get those hours of my life back. But the first hour was the presentation by the two individuals. And they were very succinct, very accurate, very, you know, professional in what they said. The next 2.5, 3 hours were the congressmen yelling at each other and calling each other names. And it's all about he said, she said, and it's not the president, it is the president. It was totally nonproductive. And it totally distracted, which was his goal, from the fact that they were just given information and evidence that said this went all the way up to the White House. But that's what happened. And that's what's so important about why we have to keep doing this, in spite of the fact that we're all sick and tired of talking about this. Some other information that has come to light in just the last 3 days as I talked to other people. So the organization that did this was what's called the Exempt Organization, in other words, nonprofit. That was in Cincinnati. Now, Nancy and I were audited personally because the IRS received a note from a bank saying that we had made a deposit into the Cincinnati Tea Party account. The IRS agent told us that. I mean, there was never a question of why we were being audited. They never asked a single question about the Tea Party. They didn't want to see their books. They wanted to see hard copies of every single check we had ever deposited, along with documentation of what it was for. They were going to shut Nancy's tax business down for 2 weeks. Now, had she known, she's fairly efficient. She got rid of them in 2 days. But that's not from the same office. I think that one was actually from Northern Kentucky. It turns out that one of the organizations that's, again, a conservative organization, it's the We the People Convention. I don't know if any of you went there last year. They had a great convention. Fantastic. That group filed their tax return. They are not tax exempt. They are not a 501c4. They're a normal nonprofit corporation. They filed their tax return, and the IRS, or that, which is who knows where, it's not the same, rejected it and said, you can't file this way. You got to file this other way. And when they challenged it, no one had ever seen anything like this before. So we know of at least 3 offices within the IRS that had a coordinated attack on anything dealing with Tea Party, Patriot, We the People, Constitution, anything that was opposed to what the administration's trying to do. In fact, they at one point revised the Be on the Lookout list for any group that says they are trying to better America. That was one of the criteria saying you should be delayed. Or educating on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They didn't want anybody doing that. They had to slow those groups down. So as crazy as this is, it feels like it's been going on for months. It's only been 2 months now. They kind of put some more salt in the wound when they announced in the middle of all of this that $70 million worth of bonuses were going to be handed out to the IRS, in spite of the fact that the Obama administration themselves had cut off all bonuses and rewards because of sequester. It didn't apply to the IRS. They gave away $70 million. That's roughly $1,000 for every employee, just to give you an idea of how generous they are with your money. In addition to that, there was a report published by the Inspector General, similar to the one that Russell George did for the targeting of the conservative groups, that was talking about the spending that the IRS has been doing. $50 million on conferences, and who knows how much on parties, travel, line dance lessons. I mean, it was unbelievable the array of things that they are providing to these people who are supposedly managing our taxes. I kind of cringed with the last meeting when Tom Zawistowski sort of shouted out we need to abolish the IRS. But as you look at what's going on, and actually the long history of the IRS, it's been used by both Republicans and Democrats as a club because it's such a big stick. And it works. There are entire organizations that shut down because their members found out that the IRS was trying to get their names and social security numbers. Now, we won't even give out your email, so don't worry, they're never going to find anything on your name. So, that's why they do it. It works. We've got to get rid of it. You know, a flat tax, a consumption tax, any other way that gets rid of all these people that on a whim can change how your life is going to play out. It's just crazy. Are there any questions on that? Sure. In some areas, she asked, how did that affect the participation in the Tea Party? It's hard to tell because it's one of those things, since that happened, we don't know what would have happened. I know the group that is in South Carolina, when their group found out that the IRS was asking for names and social security numbers, their membership fell off dramatically. One of the groups in Texas actually shut down. Another group actually lost a $10,000 donation because there was no way to take the donation because they didn't get their status. So it clearly had the effect of sort of, you know, throwing a wet blanket on top of the conservative movement. Now, it's also significant that all of this started up after the November 2010 elections. If you remember, even in Cincinnati, thanks to you guys, we kicked butt in 2010. I mean, there's no other way around it. And we scared the snot out of them. So they had to do something to slow us down, and this is what they chose, and it's extremely.
Okay, folks, thank you very much for being with us and listening to that old clip. And just as an update for that, I have had a correspondence with Justin Bennett Thomas, which is one of the folks and focal points of the IRS scandal. And he's came on and had a discussion with us on the show back when this was coming out. But he will be on Greta Van Susteren tomorrow night, which is 10 p.m. Eastern time. So check that out. He's going to be also going to some kind of hearing tomorrow as well. I'll try to get some more information about that. So check him out on the Greta Van Susteren tomorrow night. So what I'd like to do is leave the floor here to James and see if I can get some of his comments on what we just heard. James?
If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to touch back on the previous topic. We kind of skipped past that on Benghazi. They both really
touched together.
Oh, yeah, sure. Together.
No, definitely. They
both really kind of touched together with one theme. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, in regards to Benghazi, there was not one stand-down order given, but two stand-down orders given. Now, I am not a military veteran, but from every military veteran and every source I've been able to find, there's only one person that could have authorized the stand down, and that would have been President Obama. If that is the case, he willingly allowed those four people to die for absolutely nothing, except for, well, whatever his motivations were, and we don't know those yet. Several high-ranking military officials have come out and said that there were rescue ops within range of Benghazi, but yet they were still ordered to stand down. There's questions that are they're not being answered. And the John Boehner appointed committees that exist right now are not getting the answers done. You know, what it boils down to is the fact that, and just like with the IRS, it all points right back to one person. And that one person that is exerting his control in things that, you know, for whatever motivations, for control, for the hiding of information, and that is Barack Hussein Obama. The fact that his own records are still sealed to this day shows that from 2008, he has had something to hide from the American people. He continues this pattern today of being deceptive and unrevealing and hiding and lying to the American people. The fact that four people died in Benghazi when it was absolutely unnecessary to happen, it should be reason enough for impeachment. The fact that he directed Rice to lie to the American people is reason enough for impeachment. President Nixon was threatened with either resign or be impeached over not the burglary that happened in Watergate, but the fact that he lied to the American people. Now, the question remains is,
just how many lies does this president have to do? How many lies does he have to commit before even those are enough? When one president was forced to resign over a single lie, and yet President Obama has shown a distinct pattern of lying, of obscuring, of obstructing. I mean, by the definition of contempt of Congress himself and Eric Holder, they're the poster children of contempt of Congress. And that in and of itself is an impeachable offense for both of them, for both Eric Holder and for Barack Obama. And with the IRS, you know, how convenient that during an election year, those that were most opposed to him were intimidated, they were silenced, their ability to communicate their message was muted because of actions that happened within the IRS that were directed from the White House. All he simply had to do was tell his appointees to do this, and it happened. Looking at the pattern of abuse that has occurred since he has taken office, it's quite clear where these directives came from. They came directly from the mouth of Barack Hussein Obama. And touching back on Benghazi, it was not a spontaneous eruption of violence because of a video. And I would challenge anyone to go watch that video. It's called The Innocence of the Muslims, and it's there available on YouTube, and it's utterly laughable. The fact that they even attempted to state that what happened in Benghazi was because of that is a crime in and of itself. It's utterly laughable. I mean, you can watch it. I mean, it's, I think drunken sixth graders could come up with a better video. And I would hope they wouldn't do something like that, but you get my point. Benghazi is the nutshell that needs to be cracked, because it points to directly to CARE, which prior to the Obama administration was listed on the potential terrorist threat list. And conveniently, since President Obama, there are Muslims now working within the White House that are associated with CARE, the Center for Arab American Islamic Relations. They're working in the White House, directing, various effects of the government or functions of the government, and they've infiltrated our intelligence agencies and have erased anything from the intelligence databases that would be found offensive to Muslims. Well, I would have to think that a list of terror suspects would probably be fairly offensive to a group of terrorists. And if they crack open Benghazi, not only will it reveal the guilt of Hillary Clinton, I mean, what difference does it make? Not only will it show the guilt of her and implicate her fully in this, it will show a pattern of infiltration within our government allowed by the president of a terrorist organization, for the continuation of terror across the globe. The war on terror to Obama is over, quite simply, because those that would enact terror have infiltrated our intelligence agencies and erased the information that would lead to their capture or demise.
And before I see someone on the wants to talk to you, James, who actually brought you to my attention. So, Holly, I see you wanting to chime in. I'll open your mic up in a moment. But first, I'd like to thank Burns Michael, that's his name on Facebook, for sending me the link on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page about fundamentalerror.com. It says homepage, on the homepage, federal suit versus abortion, Obama and Obamacare. So thank you very much, Burns Michael, for posting that on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page. So I will open up the mic now to you, Holly. Thank you very much for coming into the show. And also thank you for pointing Mr. Neighbors here in our direction. How are you doing?
Great, Robert, and thanks for having me. And
you're welcome.
Nice to be able to meet James. I'm Holly. I'm in Oklahoma, and I heard about overpasses for Obama's impeachment on Facebook, and I thought, wow, there's something that I can actually go and do, that, you know, I can just, you know, make some signs and get my flags and maybe make a difference, you know, because I'm just, like so many other Americans, I'm so frustrated right now. This, it's just not right what's going on. But what I chimed in on, Benghazi, is what really touches my heart. I cannot believe how our president, however you look at him, he's our president, can go, you know, and lie about what happened there. Just blatantly, outright lie to us. I believe it could be wrong, like 3 weeks after, was in front of the UN, you know, blaming it on this YouTube video. And this is 3 weeks after, you know, everybody realized it was a terrorist attack on 9/11 of all days. Come on. You know, we all know what happened on the original 9/11 and, you know, how that made us all feel and, you know, what's going on. Oh, my gosh, this plane just hit the building and here comes another plane, you know. And it just really touches my heart. I'm frustrated. And anyway, I thank you, James, for doing everything to get this overpasses for Obama's impeachment movement going, and I stand beside it 100%. And I just wanted to chime in on the Benghazi thing. That's all.
Well, thank you, Holly. I mean, honestly, if it weren't for you and 20,000 other people that have joined this movement since then, I would just be one guy with a Facebook page. And I can't express enough how much I appreciate everything you've done and everybody else. I mean, you know, the fact is we're out to repair America, and if we, without people like yourself, I literally would be just some mad guy with a Facebook page, and I'm thankful every day for you and everyone else that has seen the possibility of this movement. You know, the fact is that anybody with the want and the desire to act can join this. Anybody and everybody can. And I don't know. I feel honored to have been inspired, you know, to create something so easily duplicatable by anyone. And I couldn't give you enough thanks.
Well, you're welcome, and I thank you right back. And Robert, if you want, go ahead and mute me, and let's get this show, keep this show rolling. I'm enjoying it.
Okay. Okay. Well, what I'll do is what I always do here in Bard's Logic is I'll keep your mic open. If you want to mute yourself on your phone, go ahead. If you ever want to chime in, that's fine too. Of course, you know, I like to share the mic with people as much as I can. And that being said, before we move on, one of the things I'd like to do is, since it is a little bit past the top of the hour, we will we'll hear some comments from Kelly, if you'd like, Kelly, because I know you have a limited amount of time with us as well tonight. And then what I'd like to do, since it is the top of the hour, to go ahead and we can go through the other two deadly seven sins, the last two of the deadly seven sins of Obama later on in the show, and we may even have to go and talk about that in the extended version, which we do a lot here on the show. So we'll go ahead, and after Kelly, we'll get some more information and some more details about the overpasses to impeach Obama. So, Kelly, go ahead.
I want to show a little bit of history about Nixon, how he was impeached, and, you know, James was right. Nixon knew about it, did nothing, and he lied, and finally the Supreme Court said, yeah, you will turn over those tapes, and then it was over. So something happened very significant on March 1st of 1974. There were several grand juries investigating Nixon, and we've done a Department of Justice, I don't remember who the Department of Justice top person was, the Attorney General, but he would sell law for contract. We spent 10,000 hours on this. There's nothing wrong with this. Well, on March 1st, 1974, came the famous indictment of the Watergate Seven. It included Haldeman, Chuck Colson, who was special counsel to the president, former Attorney General John Mitchell, who had resigned before then, but the grand jury was on him. Well, that change completely changed the political view and the political tide. And then on August, I think it was August 9th in 1974, Nixon resigned. He resigned because the House Judiciary Committee, it was a committee that passed articles of impeachment. There was like, I think, two or three that were unanimously Republican and Democrat, and a few others, they still passed, but not unanimous. He knew it was going to go to the floor, so Nixon resigned. So the key part of it was the grand jury broke through all the crap and just indictments left and right. And reading one of the indictments, by the way, these are on my website, in fourthbranch.com, the actual Watergate 7 indictment, and then Nixon's resignation letter. But it broke through all the junk that Nixon was playing, all the junk that the Attorney General was playing and denying in front of Walter Cronkite, and the public was just infuriated, and boom, it was over. So, James, if you want to connect sometime, you know, Kelly Mordecai on Facebook, I can talk to you about some things regarding the grand jury. We submitted a complaint regarding Obama's kill list, where he killed Americans with drones, which I hope that's on one of your top tens here, Robert. But Milwaukee, the 16-year-old, there's been New Mexico, Denver, and somebody from the East Coast who was killed by drones. Of course, this was in another country, but look, this is insane. And so this is something we submitted, and of course the Justice Department would not submit the complaint to the grand jury, and it violated the right of petition, First Amendment. I've researched this. I can tell you court case after court case. But anyway, so that's a little tip I want to give you if you want to connect later. We're going to submit one of these days a court case, writ of mandamus, saying, look, get this in front of the grand jury. We're through with the Department of Justice blocking the violating the First Amendment, and we're tired of them deciding what the grand jury should or shouldn't see. Well, Congressman Darrell Issa has communicated that Eric Holder has directed all federal attorneys to not submit petitions to grand juries. I mean, this is so fast-backwards, it's disgusting. So, anyway, a little bit of history, and if you want some help, you'd be glad to do that.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah, just, you know, just get a hold of me there on Facebook, and we'll just take it from there. And, you know, I'm not on there right now, so I can't go like your page, you know, put a like on your page and whatnot and investigate that with as many people as we have involved in this. I'd get overwhelmed with private messages and wouldn't be able to concentrate. So,
well, and okay, I spent a lot of time, James, going between Facebook, the chat, sometimes Twitter, and other messages, sometimes even text while I'm doing the show. So a lot of multitasking going on here behind the scenes. Let's get more detail about your movement there about impeaching Obama.
Well, basically, you know, back on June 8th, a man named Roger Ogden and a group of patriots out in Carlsbad, California, had a protest, and it made local news and hit some online media sources. And you know, I kept getting drawn back to that, you know, just over and over. And there was just something going on in my head that you know just was trying to burrow its way out into the forefront. And, you know, finally after about 5 days of looking at the same news article and just staring at those people standing on their overpass, you know, it dawned on me the fact that virtually every town in America, at least a major metro area, you know, has an overpass, which means that you don't have to go to D.C. to have your voice heard by thousands upon thousands of people. I mean, you know, there are some areas where there's 50,000 cars pass under an overpass in a given hour. And, you know, not all of them have one person in there. I mean, that's an incredible amount of people that can be communicated to by a very small amount of people. And realizing that, and, you know, it's something that I learned in my life throughout, you know, through working, through managing businesses and things like that, is that if you want to be successful in business and you want to franchise your business out, you have to make what you're doing duplicatable and as simply and as efficiently as possible. Well, and then understanding, of course, the massive influence that Facebook has on the social media world, you know, I created the page on there, Overpass for Obama's Impeachment, and and it's just, it's gone. I mean, it's literally taken on a life of its own with people that have seen it and are creating groups, and then we'll find out, you know, 2 weeks after they exist, and, well, you've got something going on in Knoxville, Tennessee. I didn't even know about this, you know. and anybody can do this that has the desire, not even just on Facebook. That's our primary presence right now. And if anybody wanted to find it and take a look and, you know, read our mission statement and read the, you know, the post of the, you know, the post made by the page, sometimes things show up on the post by others that you never know what's going to show up before we can get around to getting rid of it if it's something crazy. But, which, don't get me wrong, not everything that's posted there is something crazy. The people that have contributed to the page have been fantastic by and large. But it's just overpasses for Obama's impeachment on Facebook. We also have websites that's just very simply overpasses.org. And it's just, it's just amazing. And I feel honored every day that I come online and look and see how much it's grown. And the fact that it gives a voice and it gives hope back to people where they felt there wasn't any. I mean, I was in the same boat. I mean, I'm not rich by any means, and that's why I fully know anybody of any financial means can do this. I mean, we actually have, and I won't say what state they're in, you know, simply because, I don't want to embarrass anyone, but we have people living out of their car that are participating in this. We have elderly people that, you know, while they can't get out and protest with us, they know a lot of people, and they're bringing those people into the movement. We have people in wheelchairs that have to get assistance up onto these overpasses, but they're still there. They're still out there doing everything that they can, doing everything within their means, you know, to bring about, you know, positive change and bring real hope to America, not this false hope and change that Obama has promised. I mean, oh, he brought us hope and change, all right. He brought us change for the worse, and we hope he'll go away.
Amen.
And just to let the folks know that the links that you put there, one for overpasses for Obama's impeachment on Facebook, and also the website that he was telling us about, overpasses.org, folks here listening live or on the archives, you'll be able to find both of those links on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page. So folks, if you're new and you haven't liked the page, go ahead and do so. We'd really appreciate it. And also ask to join the Bard's Logic Political Talk group there on Facebook as well. You're welcome to do so. So that's where you can find the links to both of those places. Go ahead, Jane.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, I mean, this is another thing too. Just to let everybody, give them a little heads up. Both on the website and on the Facebook page, we've got groups to all the state links. So, I mean, if you live in Alaska, you just, you know, on the Facebook page, you just click on the Statue of Liberty. It'll bring up a list of all the state groups. Click on Alaska. Click join group. You're on your way. You know, if you live in Maine, if you live in Texas, the same thing. You know, we've got subgroups based on metro or the area of the state, and I mean it's really designed to make it just as simple as absolutely possible for anybody to have their voice out there. And the fact of the matter is, you know, the fact is you know, we're a nation of 310 million legal Americans, you know, the Egyptians have kind of made us look like chumps. They've made us look like chumps because we're sitting around being keyboard warriors by and large, and I'm not, you know, and doing nothing, you know, when our government is doing the exact same thing on a much larger scale as what was occurring in Egypt. And they got so angry and so upset that they overthrew an entire government, and amazingly, they did so peacefully. The military realized that the security of that nation was at stake, and they removed their tyrannical government. Now, you know, we would hope that nothing like that would ever have to occur here, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, Americans for the last 237 years have been the bar by which every other nation in the world, you know, tried to raise themselves to. You know, we have been the example for what the rest of the world aspired to be. You know, we were the beacon of light and hope and freedom and honesty and justice to the rest of the entire world. There's 6.5 billion people in the world right now, and 310 million people were the hope for the rest of the entire world. And that light is fading very quickly. And if we do not stand up and get out and stop being keyboard warriors and just griping and becoming increasingly frustrated, if we don't say enough, then what will happen to the rest of the world when they no longer have the high bar America has set for so long?
Yeah, so it's interesting you brought up Egypt because, I mean, is that who we want to be the folks who are the example that you're talking of? I mean, you know, for 200 years we have been, you know, 200 plus, we have been that example. And so we're going to be beat out by a Mideastern nation. I mean, the United States, I mean, truly, that is a sad thing. So we definitely have to see a movement such like the Tea Party movement in 2010, and in some ways, not all, of course, the Occupy movement that we've seen most recently, you know, just the masses of people getting up and protesting. Now, I'm not saying, you know, the violence or anything of that nature, or, you know, defecating on, you know, cars and things of that nature. But we definitely need, you know, a rising movement of the grassroots, you know, of we the people.
Well, and to add to that, I mean, you know, we can look back to the Vietnam War era protests, the fact that they had no internet, they had no cell phones, they had the postal service and landlines and word of mouth, but yet we all can look
hard
back.
Hard to imagine, huh?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. You know, but the fact that they were able to mobilize so many people with what we would look at now as primitive means of communication, the fact that they were able to mobilize so many people and change a nation, they ended a war. If it were not for those protests, who knows how long we would have remained in that country that the French asked us to intervene in, you know, and it is no easier today than I think it may ever be for people to get up and have their voice, you know, heard and have their, you know, have to be seen. If they could do it in 1968, if they can do it in Egypt, then anybody in America that says it can't be done is simply making excuses.
Well, can I chime on that for just a second, Robert?
Of course, Holly.
I think a lot of it has to do with the liberal media. You've got Obama lying about Benghazi. I don't even think a lot of Americans even realize we were attacked on 9/11. And the mainstream liberal media won't report the truth. That's just what I wanted to say.
And Kelly, would you want to chime in on either of those?
Well, I'm going to save my comment for later. I like hearing James's input.
Sure. Okay, James, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's, you know, the media, what Kelly said about the media is absolutely right. I mean, the fact of the matter is, and I'm going to step back 21 years in American history to when George H.W. Bush was president. He deregulated the media in America. And the net result of that is that now six very rich, very powerful individuals control 90% of everything everybody hears and learns in America. If not for people such as yourself we're talking to right now, I mean, we're part of that 10% right now. And 90% of everything everybody hears is controlled, is spoon-fed to the American public. And I believe with the express intent of keeping us docile and keeping us divided, the fact is that those six people have chosen to lie to the American people for whatever their overall agenda is. And my advice to people would be to turn off the TV. When 10 o'clock news rolls around, turn it off. Don't watch the 6 o'clock news. You know, turn it off. Get on, you know, if you've got to find the news, get online. Go search for, you know, an alternate news source. Obviously, you want to do some fact-checking to make sure that the source you're reading is accurate. You know, but the fact of the matter is that the talking heads on the major networks, they're lying to you. They're only telling you tidbits to get you to think what they want you to think. And if you're believing them, then you're falling into the trap of complacency that they want you to fall into.
And I even think, you know, I think some of your, you know, so-called conservative medias, such as Fox News, can't always be trusted as well, especially during an election cycle. I mean, there were some things that were just outright lies or omissions that I've heard on, you know, Fox News, where, you know, even when I've always said when the rubber hits the road, it's not as much about conservatism as about, you know, doing what they're instructed by the people who pay their paychecks.
Well, one thing, and I haven't been able to confirm this because it was something that just recently came to me as of yesterday, and I've been very busy with the overpasses movement, and it would be interesting if someone could confirm this for me or find some other sources to it, but from what I read is that the fact is that News Corp, Rupert Murdoch's company is actually donated far more money to progressive Democrats running for office than he did to any conservative. So one has to seriously doubt the veracity and the honesty of even Fox News when the fact their owner, according to this source, donated 5 times more money to the Democrat National Committee than he did to Mitt Romney's campaign. That certainly brings in a very large doubt into even what Fox News is saying. I think, you know, looking at the evidence of what they have reported would say that they throw out enough conservative sound bites to get your attention, to make you believe they're conservative. But in the, you know, when it boils down to it, their agenda is exactly the same as the other 5 people that are controlling 90% of everything we hear.
That's why we really promote folks doing their own research. We promote that a lot on the show is for people to go out. And as you said, James, do your fact checking, things of that nature. Make sure that it's, you know, reliable source, an authoritarian source, authoritative, I should say, not authoritarian, authoritative source, and do your own research, you know, so you can't always believe the, you know, even the, you know, the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys, and not Sean Hannity as much as, you know, I would say, you know, Limbaugh, even Glenn Beck. I'm not a big fan of any of them. I think they just give you another side so that, you know, so how they make money. But I do have another person on the line who I'd like to bring in. So I'll open up their mic, and, of course, I'll keep all the other mics open. And I believe this is Cindy. This is Cindy?
Yes, it is. Hello, Robert.
Okay. Well, hello, Cindy. And let me give a big thank you out to Cindy as well. She's also come in and helping me produce some shows and brought some guests on here to the show as well. So I'd like to thank you, Cindy, for your contributions. And welcome to the show tonight. How are you? And what's on your mind?
Oh, listen, it's my pleasure. I need a place to rant, and you give it to me, and so thank you.
Oh, no, anytime. You know, that's what I say. It's Bard's Logic is the grassroots We the People show, and it's definitely about you folks in the audience. So go ahead.
Well, I just want to let him know that. I'm going to be going to the overpass event in Orange City on the 6th, August the 6th. And
I just want to hear James tell us more about that. Go ahead, Cindy.
Okay, and I appreciate his giving me that outlet, you know, to be able to do something. It's like Holly said, we sit here on our computers and we write our senators, we write our congressmen. We do everything we can do, and yet it still has done nothing. There's no results. And you look at the hard work that Sheriff Joe has done, and it's just like no results. And, I mean, it just seems like nothing that we've tried seems to work, and nothing gets done about getting him out of office. But I think this is something that could really possibly work if we have the right signs. Just saying impeach Obama, I don't think will be enough. I think we need to be very descriptive and very, very detailed as much as we can be. Make our banners longer with larger letters, because a couple of pictures I've seen and some video I've seen of some overpass events, the signs were written in words that were so small, I doubt that the cars could actually read them. So first thing I think we need to make sure of is that our signs are readable from that far away. And then I think we need to say quick things and maybe even get together on our signs and spell out a message across there, so that it's something that they can take back wherever they're going to and have gotten some information. Why impeach Obama? Well, here's the reason. Okay, and I just, I don't know, that's my contribution, but I think that's how we could get the message out to people who are low-info voters. They need to know that there's some big problems. They're not even listening to TV. The ones who are listening to any kind of news, they're listening to CNN and CBS and NBC and faux news, and they're not getting the whole truth. So I think that somehow or other we have to start them thinking and somehow get them to start researching on their own and find out what exactly is going on. And there has to be an outlet for news and this in the local community. And like he said before, just when he was looking at how some guy, some obscure guy, got news media attention because he did a protest like this. And that inspired him to go and start something of his own because he saw that that got media attention. Well, this can get media attention. And when we do, we've got to have somebody there who can speak well and be able to give to the media the reasons why we want Obama impeached and why it would be, well, good for our nation anyway.
Well, I can, if you don't mind, I'll just say this real quick. And one reason besides all of the criminal activity that we need to impeach Obama and punish him to the full extent of the law, to the maximum sentence allowable, is not just to remove him. Obviously, that's a necessity. It's not just to remove him, but America runs on precedent. We look at what was done in the past to what we do in the future. And the fact of the matter is, if his actions are allowed to go without justice being done, the next president and the next president, and the president after that, and every president that would come, what a low person they could be. Anything would be excusable because they would simply have to point back to the Obama presidency and say, well, he got away with that. Nobody found that, you know. And if we don't set the example now for future generations to look back upon and say, wow, I mean, 200 some odd years after our country was founded, these people stood up and set the record straight. They made the, you know, they fixed things, and we're the inspiration. That's the way I look at overpasses, and that's why I beseech everybody to stand up and speak out, because we can be the inspiration for those in the future that face oppression, when they'll see that not once back in the days before electricity and you know, firing muskets and whatnot like that, they'll look back and see America coming into, you know, a technological age, and see that the people then were able to stand up and speak out and make things right and just in their world, and they'll look at us as an inspiration that they too can make things right again. And that's why it is so important. We have to reset the precedent for future generations, so that this will not, you know, if it should come to pass that future generations are looking upon a situation similar to what we are now, that they'll realize that they too can stand up, because it hasn't been done once, but it has been done twice. And that's why this has to happen.
And one of the things, folks, and I think this is a good segue to what I put in as the fifth, or not fifth, we've already done that. That was the IRS targeting. But the sixth deadly sin of Obama to get his impeachment is the executive overreach. And I'll play this clip here for you. It's about 4.5 minutes. But as I said, I think this is a good point to play this one.
It's actually the scariest of all of them. I struggle with what to call, but executive overreach is the easiest thing to think of. He has said it on at least 3 occasions where you can pull it up on YouTube, and that is, if Congress won't act, I will. Specifically forbid in the Constitution. There are enumerated powers for the legislature. Their job is to create the bills. It's the president's job to enforce the law of the land. That's his only requirement. He has to enforce the law of the land. He cannot write it. He cannot change it. He cannot pick and choose which ones he likes. He's got to enforce them all. And what this administration has done, to a far greater degree than any that I'm aware of in history, is their selective enforcement and the writing of their own laws. So the selective enforcement, the first thing he did when he got in office was refuse to enforce the Defense of Marriage Act. He then refused to deport people or to enforce any of the immigration rules. Everybody that tried to go after picture ID has been sued by the Department of Justice. So voter fraud is being promoted, not policed. And clearly we've got enough evidence of that now in Cincinnati. The most recent, as we spoke of earlier, is the employer mandate for Obamacare. You know, we might be glad that this isn't happening and destroying us yet, but he's not allowed to do that. Only Congress is allowed to change that law. It's not his job. Of all the people that are talking about impeachable offenses, that's the easiest one to hang your hat on. He's not allowed to change the law. In addition to changing the laws or selectively enforcing, he's used executive orders. Don't pay attention to the emails that say he's done 9,000 or some ridiculous number. He's actually done about the same as anybody else. The problem is the content of what he's doing. So he couldn't get the DREAM Act to go through Congress. That's why he sort of wrote his own rules for Homeland Security and IHS that basically said, don't prosecute illegal immigrants, or illegal aliens, as they used to be called. So he implemented the DREAM Act by executive order. Cap and trade failed, thank God. Well, EPA is now enforcing cap and trade. How many people had a brownout last night? Duke Energy browned out our house. We have 2 in the last week. You know why your house browns out like that? When everybody's got their air conditioner on, the power grid comes down. And if it comes down too far, it flat out gives up and turns off, and then comes back like 10 seconds later. The fact that that's happened twice so far this week means we don't have enough power to go around. They're about to shut down 18 coal generation plants in Ohio alone, because coal creates CO2. So does talking and breathing. It's cap and trade. He's on a war to shut down coal. But we're not building anything else. We're not building nuclear. We've got some wind farms, and we've got some solar, which is incredibly expensive. But none of it can stop the brownouts that are already occurring. So just take what's happening this week and multiply it by about 100, because when we lose those 18 power plants, we're toast. I don't know how they're going to do it other than to jack the price up so high that you can't afford electricity. It's a new growth market, I guess. So, I mean, from the point of view of what's really going on behind the scenes, I didn't even mention some of the crazy stuff that's in these executive orders. Basically, what's being set up by the executive order system right now is, if there is an emergency in the United States, he takes over the food supply, all manufacturing, all communications, all electronics, and all supply of electricity. There's executive orders for every single one of those. So why would you write a rule that says, if an emergency happens, I get everything, if you're not ready to cause an emergency? That should scare everybody. I hate the conspiracy theory stuff, but why would you write that? I mean, there's no other conclusion to this. I encourage everyone, it's very easy to get the actual text of all of these things. Don't believe the emails, but go and find it for yourself. Thomas.gov will give you all of that stuff. So if you've got any questions, I encourage you to go on the internet and look yourself. So that's kind of the top 10, as it were, if you will, of what.
Okay, James, and he did mention that being one of the, could be a big push for the executive overreach for impeachment. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, he was absolutely correct in the fact that is an impeachable offense. I mean, he thinks he's above the law, that he, you know, it reminds me of like some crazy version of Judge Dredd, you know, I am the law, you know. I mean, the fact of the matter is that he's not King Obama. He can't rule by decree, but yet, for whatever reason, Congress has chosen not to put him in check. You know, executive orders of the nature that he has written, I mean, control of food, water, electricity, and communications, this didn't even happen in World War II when we were fighting the Third Reich. And, I mean, there was rationing that was necessary because of the industrial base we had back then. But, you know, nothing like this has ever occurred in the history of this nation. And if that's not an impeachable offense, the fact is his overreach and his refusal to enforce laws, I mean, well, and another one is immigration. He is willing, you know, I'm sorry, border control. The fact that he is intentionally allowing our nation to be invaded, and there is no other word for it, mm-hmm. invaded by a foreign nation, should be reason enough to remove him from office. I mean, you know, the fact that his actions are undermining the security of the United States, in a word, is treason. And if that's not enough to move Congress by the, you know, the goodness of their hearts, you know, pardon my sarcasm there, but you know, to remove this man, one has to wonder, well, what exactly is their agenda? I mean, there is a handful of people, there are a handful of people, rather, in Congress that are trying to do the right thing. But then you have people like, John Boehner, who could with the flick of a wrist and put pen on paper, open up a Watergate-style investigation into Obama, well, into everything Obama's done, but, you know, let's just start with Benghazi, and then once that gets opened up and we know what happened there, that'll open up the can of worms, and we can see everything else that has been done. But the fact is one man in America out of 310 million holds the fate of this nation in his hands, and for whatever reason, he's complicit with Obama in his agenda, and
Boehner's a spineless, you know, ooze. how Boehner got to remain to be the, you know, Speaker of the House after the abysmal loss. I'm not just talking about the presidency. They lost, you know, seats in the House and Senate too. How he could still maintain being the Speaker of the House after their abysmal failure in 2012. Well, it's not beyond me. I mean, I know how he's still in it because the Republican Party's run by the rhinos at this point. And then, of course, Priebus, you know, same thing. It's incredible. I mean, Boehner's done really nothing but lip service to curtail what Obama's trying to get done. And, well, one of the things I'd like to do here is bring some things in from the chat. I know I haven't had an opportunity to do that before now. And I'd just like to bring in from A12 Iggy Mom. And thank you very much for coming to the show and contributing to the chat. And she's putting a quote up there of Obama saying that he said he only has 1,250 days left, and we're presuming he's talking about for his agenda. You did, let's see. Okay, great. Actually, somebody's messaging me from Facebook, that's what I was talking about. But thank you very much, A12, Big Imam, for putting that in there. And I think one of the things you did say, James, and I'll play the last of the seven deadly sins of Obama for his impeachment is about amnesty and illegal immigration. And it's only about a couple-minute clip, and it is the last one. So I'm happy that we're able to get it in, but I think it was a good segue to do that since you brought it up. So here it is.
Specific reason. Originally, August, we were going to have Josh Mandel here. I was given a firm date and an absolute commitment, which 3 days later was revoked. So, what we now have instead is, how many know Dennis Michael Lynch? He has done two documentaries on the cost of amnesty and what illegal immigration is doing to the United States. He will be here on August 19th. So this is a nationally known guy. He's done two movies. If you've got the email today, in the bottom left-hand corner, there's a couple of links that you can follow to get the information. I have Ruth Schoenhoff. Where are you, Ruth? She dropped off some copies of the movies. If you want to get a sneak peek on what's coming in August on the 19th, Dennis is going to be here to talk about that. I've seen a large portion of this. Is absolutely amazing. It's all facts, information. It's not coming from, you know, who are the immigrants. It's coming from why is this destroying the country. It should be very, very interesting. That'll be August 19th here. If you can't make the 19th, it'll be August 20th out in Glendale. I forget the theater, but there's a theater out there that has agreed to show it. So the illegal immigration thing, it did pass the Senate. Rob Portman, thanks to you guys, did not vote for it. I was told by his staff that we clogged his board for an entire week. Thank you. So Rob did vote for it. I have been told by, let me get to where I gotta go here. I have been told by John Boehner's office that they're not going to take up the Senate bill. I don't know how solid that is, but that's what they were saying 3 weeks ago. What they did say is there are several bills that they're creating of their own to try and do it piecemeal. So it's not dead yet. It's very possible that they might try and backdoor it in by one step at a time. So we can't take our eye off of the illegal immigration, but you'll get more information on that next month. Are there any other questions before we go on to candidates?
And you did mention some movie there. I wish I would have heard it was kind of garbled there, and I apologize to you folks for that. And there wasn't a lot of information there, you know, but there was some. But it definitely was something that was mentioned during the Tea Party meeting, and that is why I wanted to bring it out. So what I'd like to do is get some reaction from you, James, and then Holly, if you want to chime in, or Cindy, you as well, you're welcome to. I see that you're back on the line there, Kelly. Thank you very much for calling back in. Just push 1 on your number dial if you'd like to chime in. And we will continue talking more about the overpasses for Obama's impeachment. But I do see this show's gone very quickly tonight, and that there's only 15 minutes of live time for the show. But for those who can stay and listen to the extended version or be with us for the extended version, I appreciate it. And the way to do that, because those who are in chat will not be able to hear the extended version, but they can, of course, right after the show, go back and listen to the archive, which hopefully everyone will share the link tonight with friends, families, neighbors, everyone who is concerned about what's happening here in America. For those who have not come to the live show tonight, can listen to it in the archives, and they can share it as well. And, of course, they can check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk page and group, and also the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And, of course, you can always follow this show here by clicking the little follow button under the show's icon here on Blog Talk Radio. And so if you'd like to listen in or to chime in to the extended version, you can call at area code 347-945-7428. Again, that's 347-945-7428. So we will continue on with the show with James Neighbor here and his overpasses for Obama's impeachment. Now, we talked about kind of a national, you know, a day for a national movement here on August 6th. So, James, if you'd tell us more about that, that'd be great.
Well, on August 6th, we'll have an event that, as far as I know, has never happened in the United States. It's called the Patriot Wave, and it will start in Eastern Time Zone during rush hour traffic, 7 a.m. approximately, you know, depending on the city and the local planning, and then, of course, when their rush hour begins. Cities across the Eastern Time Zone will stand up in freedom rallies to call for the impeachment of President Obama. That will proceed across the United States by time zone, going from Eastern, and then at 7 to 7:30 in Central, then to Mountain, and then Pacific. The fact of the matter is that it may start in the Eastern Time Zone, the media will ignore it. It could spread. It'll spread to the Central Time Zone, and the media will ignore it. By the time it hits the Mountain Time Zone, they should be scratching their heads and wondering what exactly is going on. And we have got a very, very large group of people out in California and on the coast that are just chomping at the bit, waiting for their chance. And we believe that by the time it hits the West Coast, that the media will be paying attention. And it's always possible that they'll continue to black it out, and that's fine, because by that time we'll have brought the attention to millions of people across America. And then when they go, if they don't see it on the news, they will really begin to wonder what's going on. Now the thing is, we're not finished. Then we will, you know, we're not doing this an all-day event, you know, simply because of the fact that some of the people, many of the people that are in this, you know, they have physical ailments. They're elderly. You know, there's children involved when their parents bring their children. You know, we'll be out there for a few hours. We'll take a break, and we'll see the America again for another wave to sweep across the country from sea to shining sea at the evening rush hour. And by then, America will be quite aware of what's going on. And you know, I mean, Florida is amazing. New York is amazing. I mean, just see so many of these states. And I don't mean to discredit any of them, because the entire movement is amazing. I mean, in six weeks, 20,000 people have joined this, and they're going to stand up and speak out and make the nation aware of what's happening. And all I would ask is that if you haven't joined yet, get there and join up. You can do it to, you know, don't wait till the last moment. Do it today. Do it tomorrow. And become aware of where this is going to happen in your area, because you can do it. If you have any desire to do anything for this country, if you love America at all, now is your chance to stand up and speak out.
And definitely, and we definitely have to get involved. We have to get involved early. Even some of the folks who, you know, are into the, you know, getting involved in elections. I mean, it's even time to start getting into elections. I can't get tongue tied there for 2014. And even I don't even think it's too early for those who get involved for the presidential elections to start getting involved now, especially because, you know, it's very important to get involved early and build an organization, you know, for those types of campaigns. And I've heard, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, or, you know, about the show tonight,
and they're talking about the Senate, of course, oh, well, we have to change the Senate in order for them to really get, you know, it be impeachable, be possible to get him impeached. Well, that's why we have to, you know, as James alluded to, if not said, is, you know, hit the ground running. You know, you have to join the movement. You have to get active now. And so you are prepared for when, you know, the Senate does become out of the Democrats' hands. And so then you already have the foundation set through, you know, getting involved with, you know, these events for, you know, the people to be aware of it. So they're like, okay, now's the time. Now we have it set. We have the awareness, and now we have it set so we can get this accomplished. So you can't just wait, well, you know, the Senate isn't out of the Democrats' hands yet. Well, you have to move before that happens, because if you wait, well, then it'll be too late. I mean, if you wait and do it beforehand, it'll be the awareness won't be there, and it'll just be too late. But I do want to open up the mic here for you, Holly, and then Cindy, if there's anything you guys would like to make comment or ask any questions to Mr. Neighbors.
Well, that's just one thing that I really like about this movement is I'm not rich by any means either, and I can't afford to go to Washington, D.C., and even though I kind of grew up around there earlier on in life, but I'm in Oklahoma now, and I can't really make that trip. Have a little bit of disability myself, so it makes it nice for me to be able to not have to drive that far to a metro area and to be able to simply, you know, be there for an hour, however long I want to, at my convenience, and hold my signs with impeachable offenses on them, and wave our flag, and it just really makes it nice. I feel better, and I feel like I'm doing something to help my country, and I can get my frustrations out of my system.
And Cindy? I think Cindy's still there. She may have had to step away for a little bit.
Yeah, hang on.
Oh, there you are.
Hang on.
You're just, sure.
Well, while we wait for her, I'd like to touch on the illegal immigration thing real quick.
Oh, sure.
One thing that we could fix two problems at all at once. Well, actually three. By addressing illegal immigration like it should be. You know, the fact of the matter is, you know, we do need border patrol and border control. And, pardon me, one of the most neglected group of people and the most unemployed and the most number of homeless people in America right now are veterans that have returned from the Middle East. And the fact of the matter that that they have been so neglected to the point to where, you know, they, you know, that they're in such a plight, it's a shame upon our country. I have a suggestion. Why don't we hire them as Border Patrol?
They obviously have
the skill to work in a desert environment. They obviously understand how to patrol, how to spot things, in that they know they're naturals for that job, and we could end the homeless and joblessness of the veterans in America simply by employing them. Now the other point to that is, you know, while they're being trained, because, you know, let's face it, you know, patrolling a border is not exactly the same thing as going to war, but in the meantime, we could get our people out of Afghanistan and put them on that border while that training goes. I mean, obviously some of these veterans are going to need some counseling. They're going to need some help, you know, because they're not homeless because everything is all good in the world. They've got some problems. So while we're getting them the counseling to get them right again and getting them employable, we could have our own border, you know, our own border controlled by our military. It is a threat to national security, and we need to defend our border. And I mean, it would thrill me to no end to see an M1 Abrams tank with Border Patrol painted on the side.
I like it.
So we would, you know, we would extract ourselves from a war that the people there don't want us to be in, and we would be protecting our own nation. And at the same time, you know, creating jobs for people and helping people that, you know, have given a lot for this country. And I think that would be an ideal way to honor them and to you know, to help them and allow them to continue to serve the country that they love so
right.
much, that they gave so much already.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I just want to make a note because I do see it's about 5 minutes till the end of the live version here on Bard's Logic Political Talk, but we will be going into extended version. I don't know how much time after that, but it looks like we will, and I do see some folks here on the switchboard listening in, and if you would like to chime in, just hit the 1 on your number dial, and I'll see that you'd like to get in, or, of course, if you're on Skype, you can send me a message from here in the chat, or you can also send me a message there on Facebook or through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website contact page. So just hit the 1 on your number dial phone and go from there. Sorry for interrupting, folks. I just wanted to get that in there while we had some time. So, Cindy, are you ready to chime back in? Or?
Yes, I'm here now.
There we go. Okay. Well, that's okay, Cindy. Go ahead.
All right. Well, you know, the fact that Congress has the power of the purse, and we saw what Newt Gingrich did with that back in the 90s, tells me that there's something big wrong in our Republican leadership in the House.
Oh, that's for certain.
We should have a lot of stuff done already that would stop Obama, but we don't. And there's a reason for that, and I don't think it's because they don't know what they're doing. I don't think it's because they're too stupid to figure it out. I don't think it's their lack of knowledge about the Constitution. I think it's because we have progressive plants in our Republican Party, and I think they're in control of the House right now. And you see how
and the
hard,
leadership.
Yeah, that's what I mean, in the leadership. And you see how hard people like Rand Paul.
I'm at the RNC as well. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes. And you see how hard people are trying to work to stop him, you know, the ones in the Senate that are trying to stop what's going on there. And yet nobody is doing anything in the House where they have all the power at. There's just something really wrong with that, and I think it's there is a very nefarious reason for it, and that if we knew only half of what's going on up there, we would be even madder than we are now. But this is Congress. We still have Obama because of Congress. They refuse to impeach when they should impeach. They
mm-hmm.
refuse to use the power of the purse. They refuse to look at any of the things that they have the power to do. So,
I agree.
Did Kelly leave?
Yeah, he had some things he had to attend to. He is still on the line. If he'd like to chime in, he told me that he'll let me know when he's available to do so, but he's still out there. He's still listening. He'll chime in when he can. And so,
well,
let me get back to
I
my message
to
here
ask,
on Facebook. Yeah, go ahead, Cindy.
I just wanted to ask him. See, I don't know anything about the grand jury, and I wanted to ask him what's the protocol for instituting a grand jury? How do you get one started? Who can do it and why? And, you know, I don't know anything about it. And that's pathetic. I mean, we should all know that because that has more to do with we the people than anything else we've got in government. So.
Well, and we do have on the line our resident expert on the grand jury. And here he is. Thank you very much, Kelly.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I hope my battery doesn't go dead here. I got to get to the source. Anyway, the grand jury goes back to the Magna Carta, and the barons of England bragged for 80-some years that they were the protectorate of the people against the atrocities of King John and other kings who were oppressive. And anyway, it came into our country. It's been affirmed by multiple Supreme Court cases and how they have fashioned, I mean, a grand jury is every investigating the government. So, and of course, investigating street criminals. But the system has been tweaked. And I was recently asked to do a, not writ of certiorari, something, it's a legal term for the historical background and precedent and how it was used. A right of petition has been called out by the Supreme Court, Attlee versus Florida, 66, recently Bureau of Duryea versus Garneria, 2011. And basically, our present Supreme Court said, yeah, it goes back to the right of petition, goes back to the Magna Carta. Studying even further, the right of petition, the petition is supposed to go to the grand jury, not the legislature, not the judicial branch or a lawsuit. And of course, logic tells you not against the executive, because the executives are the ones who are like oppressing you. So that's a country, and let's say a whole bunch of government indictments, but that's how powerful this thing is, and that's why the Justice Department is blocking complaints or petitions to grand juries, because they don't want to be investigated.
Well, is there a standing grand jury, or do they just get called by somebody?
All federal districts have a grand jury. There's a special grand jury that works more so on RICO and racketeering if the population of the federal district is more than 4 million people. So the federal grand jury is all over the country. And there is, what, 79 or is it 89 federal districts in this country? I mean, they're already there. They're existing. But the problem is most people on the grand jury don't know their power. That's why I wrote the book. They don't realize that they can tell the federal prosecutor, you just shut up, okay? We're taking over. And that's from John Jay's initial charge to the Richmond grand jury of 1793. It's your job to investigate. Well, I wasn't just the department investigating for the grand jury. 1793. Why? Because the Justice Department didn't exist until 1870.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so,
a dream job. I want a job on the grand jury.
Well, when you get a jury summons, better well go to it. But we can petition. That's what we have to do. And our next step with our the drone strikes, you know, the drone strikes on Americans, Killgate is what it's really called, but our next step is to get in front of a judge and say, look, here's the history. Writ of mandamus, get it done. There's another case precedence where the judge says, yeah, you will get this to the grand jury. So, you know, of course, I'm out of money, time, and all sorts of stuff to really keep moving forward. But it's just powerful. That's why they are opposing it and doing everything they can to manipulate it.
Yeah.
I mean, took down a president. Of course they don't want to know. You know, and indicted an attorney general, John Mitchell. So, of course, the federal government wants to oppose. So I just have to dig deeper.
Oh, there you go.
I just have to dig deeper, that's all.
Yeah, charge the phone, because unfortunately one of the setbacks of the extended version is if someone is on the line and they drop the call, unfortunately they're not able to get back in, so charge that phone.
Okay, I'll get on it, buddy.
You definitely have some great stuff. Go ahead, Cindy.
I charged mine earlier today, making sure that I'd be ready.
Okay, great. But I do want to bring it back to our guest tonight, Mr. Neighbors. If you'd like to chime in on anything that that he said, go ahead.
Well, I've got to say that was an education on the grand jury system. Kind of makes all of those petitions that went to the White House rather pointless, which would explain a lot. As to why they've gone unheeded. I mean, obviously, if we send in a petition to impeach the president, well, to the White House, you know that that's going to go straight into the recycle bin on their computer. You know, they'll look at that and get a laugh. Aha, look at those silly Americans. They think they can do something, you know, I'm quite certain that the White House staff probably has a little nightly get together where they gather around the computer where those petitions come in and say, well, here's another one. Let's take a look at it. And they open it up. They all have a good laugh at it because of the unfortunate ignorance of the American people. I mean, I didn't understand that's how the grand jury system worked, and you know, I've learned a lot in the last, you know, few years about how our government does work, and that was news to me. I've got to do a little more research into that, see exactly how we can go about making that happen.
Well, I agree with you.
Go ahead, Cindy. I agree
with you, and you and Kelly need to get together on this, because you're two good thinking heads that need to plan something. Something has to get going.
Exactly, and since we're bringing up the grand jury, I'd like to give a shameful plug for you there, Kelly, to folks go to www.thehiddenfourthbranch.com, and the four is actually the number four, correct, Kelly?
Yeah, fourth branch. Three branches of the government are Larry, Moe, and Curley, and that's the need for the fourth branch.
And then also, you have a book of the same name that folks can find on Amazon, correct?
Yeah, and there's an enormous amount of research in there and other stuff on the website. So I'm rushing to my charger right now. So hopefully I'll come back in a little bit. But, yeah, this is something when we have a monumental thing happen. I mean, here's the history of the Magna Carta, okay? This is how important Magna Carta is. King John, bad King John.
Didn't you like to wish me a happy Magna Carta Day? I remember that. First time that someone's ever done that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, King John of England in the early 1200s was just a tyrant and taxing people to death. And so the barons invaded from the north, conquered London. King John had to flee for his life. And a Catholic priest wrote the Magna Carta in Latin. And the barons said, look. Barons and nobles said, hey, look. You sign this, we'll let you have the throne again, but this document limits your power. First time in modern history, a king was held to account of a document. So he signed it, then he had it annulled by the Pope. Then he went around killing barons to sign the Magna Carta, and then there was another civil war after that. The barons prevailed to hold the king to account. We had our American Revolution, but that was really inspired by what the barons of England did. Rochester was a baron. Albany was there. Rochester was a castle that King John attacked. Rochester, New York. Baron Albany was a noble baron, but the East Coast history, you know, New York, New Jersey, there's a lot of culture that came over from Great Britain. And so eventually, a parliament was formed, late 1300s, and the idea of three branches of the government came out of the British system. They actually had a constitution. But this is how powerful, I mean, when you hold a tyrant to account, he's going to retaliate. So there was two civil wars before 1215, the signing of the Magna Carta. This is how beautiful it is, and our Supreme Court has affirmed it over and over in multiple court cases. So, I mean, that's a short history, and again, everybody, happy Magna Carta Day.
Yes, you did. I appreciate that one. I can't remember. That was a little bit back, but so
Amicus Curious is what I've been asked to write for a certain federal case,
mm-hmm.
which is a history of why are we doing this process? So, anyway.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, with the Facebook page, now is that broken down into different states that folks could go to find out where they would meet other people from their state or locality?
Yes.
To meet up for the August 6th?
Yes, it is. On the Facebook page, when they first come to the Facebook page after, you know, doing a Facebook search on the bar at the top of Facebook, just type in overpasses for Obama's impeachment, hit enter, we'll come up. It's right there. Go to the page, and as soon as the page page loads, you'll see the pinned post at the top of the page, the Statue of Liberty. Just, you can either click on where it says see more, or you can just click on the picture of the Statue of Liberty, and it'll pull up a list of all of the 50 state, the main 50 state groups, and, you know, click on what state you live in, and you're on your way. Also on the website, overpasses.org, at the top of the page, you'll see where it says state links or state groups, and click on that. It'll take you to the same list. And you know, again, click on whatever state you live in, Massachusetts, Kansas, North Dakota, just whatever, and click on that. You know, you have to click to join the group because, you know, we do kind of give people a little bit of a look before they join because you never know when we could be attacked by Obama zombies. And, you know.
That's right.
That's what they used to call, you know, because I wasn't a big fan of Romney by any stretch of the imagination. And during the election, that's what I used to call the Romney supporters, to be honest, during the primaries and even kind of during the general election, I called them Romney zombies.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was no fan of Romney, but, you know, Obama had to go under whatever, you know, we had to get somebody in there besides him.
And Romney was the worst. I can't believe folks were even, you know, or the talking heads were saying, oh, Obama, I mean, Romney's the only person who can really beat Obama when the exact opposite was true. He's probably the worst candidate to go up against Obama.
You know, I'll tell you who I think could have beaten Obama hands down, and that would have been Herman Cain. But unfortunately, he was smeared with a false accusation of an affair. But I would talk about eliminating the race card entirely. I would have enjoyed you know, a great deal to watch Herman Cain wipe the floor with Barack Hussein Obama in the debate.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think he could have done. I think two others who I thought could have done it as well as I think Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. I think those two could have beaten Obama as well.
Well, the easiest way to beat Obama is just to turn off his teleprompter.
Yeah. Why didn't anybody think of that during the campaign season?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, well, that reminds me of. That reminds me of a cartoon that I thought of that a friend of mine drew up, and the setting was a debate, an election debate, where it had Obama with teleprompters in front of him, and on one side, and on the other side, it had Romney with Newt Gingrich staying behind him, talking in his ear, giving him the answers.
Well, I tell you what, one thing I would love to see, and I think all of America would love to see, would be to see, just like we've seen on some news reports, I'm trying to remember which movie it was, but it would be probably a similar thing to what happened in Bruce Almighty when the reporter was suddenly just psycho-babbling, but it would be quite entertaining for somebody to take the script that was in the teleprompter and change it to something completely inane because...
No, something completely conservative. That would be great.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I hate to cut this short, but for some reason or another, my national admins have been ringing my phone off the hook for the last 10 minutes, so I don't know if there's something going on, but they're trying to get a hold of me very urgently. So
okay, well, it would definitely keep us posted, sure.
Well,
oh,
James,
can I just ask you one more thing?
I just wanted to thank you one more time.
thank you so much. I mean, I'd just be some crazy guy screaming into the night if it hadn't been for everybody that's joined up. And I mean, it's this entire thing has just been a blessing to me since day one. It's almost hard to believe that, you know, that so many people share this with me, and that's the beauty of the whole movement is the fact that we, you know, we aren't about division. This is bringing people together. I think in a way, I mean, there will be people that have met on this that'll be friends for the rest of their lives, and that's one thing that our current president has been sadly missing is creating unity in, you know, in his agenda, and you know, it's It really is. It's been a huge blessing, and I mean, I couldn't thank you enough. I really couldn't thank you enough, and everybody else.
Well, Diane, thank you very much for coming to the show and keep us posted with any kind of updates. I appreciate it.
That would be fantastic. Anytime you want me on, I'll be here.
Awesome. And Cindy, I don't know if you'd have the time to answer a quick question, but I know you had one. I didn't want to interrupt you.
Well, if we impeach Obama, we've got Biden. Are we going to be able to stop the agenda with O'Biden in there?
We don't have to worry about Biden, and I can tell you in two words why, and it's called Extortion 17. The fact that the members of Navy SEAL Team 6 died because they were identified and then tracked because Joe Biden released top secret information that led to their demise.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Incredible.
At least
Exchange 17. From Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, several counts of reckless manslaughter and the release of top secret information.
So why hasn't he been prosecuted?
I mean, he'll have to behave anyway because we'll be making a statement if we do get Obama impeached. We'll be making a huge statement.
Hold on, ladies. I want to give – Kelly wants to chime in real quick, and, you know, I'd like to give equal time where I can, but go ahead, Kelly. Sorry, ladies.
Well, I'm respecting that James has to leave, and I would respect if he leaves any moment, but thank you again for what you're doing.
Thank you. I mean, I'm not one to really react well to compliments. I find it embarrassing, and thank you.
Well, we just appreciate it.
But no, thank you all very much. I do need to see what's going on with those guys.
No problem. I appreciate you giving us all the time that you did.
Oh, thank you again, and God bless America.
God bless you. Thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Good night.
Take care, Miss Neighbors.
Bye.
All right, folks. That was James Neighbors of the Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment. It was great to have him on. I look forward to getting some updates about the movement from him in the near future. One of the things I want to play real quick. It's a little clip. It's only about a 4-minute clip. I think the audience here, especially the folks here on the call now, will enjoy it. I did mention it. We were talking back at the debates, and wouldn't this have been a glorious debate back in the 2012 election?
Gingrich. Tonight, Newt Gingrich, again, I think did the best.
The guy that I'm agreeing with most up on stage is probably the guy to my left, so I would say that Newt Gingrich would be the guy.
Actually, Newt has been one of the best of the other candidates.
Newt Gingrich showed last night why many conservatives believe he is the best person to take on Obama.
Anybody who's covered Newt Gingrich over the years knows better than to underestimate him.
When Newt Gingrich goes after the mainstream media or one of their reporters, he's going after Barack Obama, and that's what the Republican primary voters want.
It actually got a standing ovation, which is fairly unusual in a debate like this.
These debates are part of the reason why Newt Gingrich just won South Carolina.
Well, maybe we should go along with what Gingrich wants and have debates without moderators.
Why Newt Gingrich?
Well, I just think he's got the best economic plan of any of the candidates.
Tea Party Nation founder Judson Phillips says Newt is the most electable, and he's also impressed with Gingrich's debate performances.
Reagan conservative, grassroots, which is Newt Gingrich.
Let's take a look at the extraordinary men and women who make up the 104th Congress, and of course its distinguished speaker, Newt Gingrich. Barry Goldwater handed the torch to Ronnie. And in turn, Ronnie turned that torch over to Newt.
The distinction between Speaker Gingrich and President Obama will be so distinct that I think that gives him the best chance in order to be able to get elected president.
Newt Gingrich comes out as the big winner tonight.
And it's rare that the group almost unanimously picks one winner. Tell me, who won this debate? Show the audience, how many of you were backing Gingrich 10 days ago? Raise your hands. And how many of you thought that he won today?
Newt Gingrich would he would clobber Barack Obama in any debate, any forum that had to do with substance when it comes to policy and solutions for the challenges that America faces. Newt Gingrich would clobber Barack Obama.
And what I want to do is to make sure that the plumber, the nurse, the firefighter, the teacher, the young entrepreneur who doesn't yet have money, I want to give them a tax break now. And that requires us to make some important choices. Last point I'll make about small businesses, not only do 98% of small businesses make less than $250,000, but I also want to give them additional tax breaks because they are the drivers of the economy. They produce the most jobs.
The fact is that more people have been put on food stamps by Barack Obama than any president in American history. Now, I know among the politically correct you're not supposed to use facts that are uncomfortable. Second, you were the one who earlier raised a key point. The area that ought to be I-73 was called by Barack Obama a corridor of shame because of unemployment. Has it improved in 3 years? No. They haven't built the road. They haven't helped the people. They haven't done anything.
Senator Todd, Mr. Speaker.
One last thing.
Yes, sir.
So here's my point. I believe every American of every background has been endowed by their creator with the right to pursue happiness. And if that makes liberals unhappy, I'm going to continue to find ways to help poor people learn how to get a job, learn how to get a better job, and learn someday to own the job.
Sorry, folks. It's been a while since I played that clip. Of course, it was back from the election. And would that not have been a debate for, you know, that just would have been an incredible debate if there would have been between Newt Gingrich and Obama. And I really think that, you know, he would have blown him out of the water, defeated Obama in 2012, and, you know, we would be having much different conversations than we are now. Probably much happier conversations than what we're having now. What do you girls think?
Absolutely.
Amen.
Amen and amen.
That was awesome. I enjoyed that. Thank you for playing it.
I love those clips. I love those clips. And yet, and you know, you and I, and Holly, we can all see the wisdom and how he spoke, and we could see the clarity and how. Well, duh, of course that's the way it should be, you know. And yet it seems like there's just so many people who can't, they don't have any wisdom anymore. There's nobody in this country with wisdom. There's nobody that can think. They're all just whatever, they just absorb everything out of Fox if they think they're conservative, or they absorb everything out of CNN or NBC or somebody like that if they're a liberal. And it's like they can't think for themselves anymore.
It's well, that, so and then you have the Obama administration that was, you know, there was fraudulent voting going on, and I don't know, it's just a battle that we're still fighting, unfortunately.
Well, and Kelly here, I want to throw out some thoughts about, because I always stand up for the American people. I really believe in the American people. You know, a complete person is... mental, heart, physical, spiritual, all right? When we just go for the mental of Americans are stupid, they can't think for themselves, I don't believe that. What I see in the American people is powerlessness. When their heart tells their mind that there's nothing I can do, I give up, I'm frustrated, the powers that be, that's where they want us. The solution to this is to empower the American people. When you empower the American people, they will work hard to think through and decipher and discern all the junk they're getting thrown at. They throw it out, they go online. I mean, why is, you know, of course, Gingrich is awesome. I love that he brought in cameras into the Congress and, you know, C-SPAN and all. The youth was also following, you know, Ron Paul, they were in thought, or Nick Gingrich. You know, Robert and I have had these talks, but we dearly love where each other is. We just different flavor, and we've, you know, we feel love from a lot. But, you know, it's the empowerment that we have to bring to the American people. And once they have the empowerment, the inspiration, we will see Americans thinking and voting the right way. I always stand up for the American people when someone says they can't think. And, you know, I also stand up for the Hebrews when people say that the Jews were stupid, you know, rejecting God, all that stuff. But I was like, no. Who wrote the Bible? Oh, mostly Jews, you know. So, you know, it's like we got to be careful where our heart leads us, because if we don't believe the best, or if we don't believe we can empower our fellow American, it's over.
And that's what I love about what James has been able to put together with this overpasses, because that empowered me to be able to actually go do something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was so grateful for that. I'm like, when I first saw it, I was like, wow, I can actually go do this, you know, and try to help, you know.
Well, he also has a key element that is necessary in this movement. It's heart. It's heart and connecting people, understanding the value of unity and getting numbers. And people can read that, and they want to follow because of heart. You know, here's a simple proverb, okay? Came up with this years ago. If you love someone, they could do no wrong. If you hate someone, they can do no right. For the heart drives the mind. If you win the people's hearts and you unify them, we will have enormous numbers to accomplish what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where James is at. He's got it.
Right.
Well, and another person, I'm going to get back to this, and there's a method to my madness, so to speak. But, you know, you're mentioning about
involved?
The American people and, I'm sorry?
Is there madness involved?
No, not really madness, but it's just a phrase, you know, that folks use. You know, but there is something that I am, you know, pushing for. I think it's very important. I think it's a place where what we need to revisit and get the train going again. And, you know, there's another individual who talks about the, you know, America as magical and talks about, you know, the people of America. And so just a little embellishment here, and if people would humor me, I do have another clip that I would like to play. I think you all will enjoy it. And this is called America is Magical.
America is magical. It's why cynics and academics and Europeans and others never quite understand this. And we're magic because we really do believe that we can be a city upon a hill. We really do believe that we have been endowed by our Creator. And that isn't an act of arrogance. It's an act of humility. Because it means we have a responsibility. We are people who have been placed on this planet with the opportunity to extend freedom all the way to every human being. We care about people so much that if there's a tsunami in Indonesia, we're there. If there's an earthquake in Turkey, we're there. If there's a hurricane in Honduras, we're there. Part of us has a tear every time a child is lost anyway. That's why if you watch our news, we pay such intense attention when children are lost. Because every single child is a child of mine. We've gotten off on the deep end. And we've done this before, honestly. And we're in a little bit of a mess. And we've had a weak period of political leadership. And we have bureaucracies that think they're Europeans and that we're only subjects and they can order us around. And we have judges who are alienated and think that they actually represent some international worldview superior to the Constitution. And we have a news media that reflects the academic world and an academic world that reflects the fantasy of the left. And so all those things come together. And we have some problems. We are the wealthiest, most extraordinary society society in the history of the human race. At this very moment, we are the largest economy by a large scale. We are capable of pulling away from China as decisively as in the 1990s we pulled away from Japan. We have the most powerful military in the history of the world. But we have to come back to grips with a decision about who we are. And what I would say to every young person here tonight is, you're at the edge of a revolution in scientific knowledge that is going to liberate you in the next half century, fully as much as any generation of Americans. I'll close with a person I admire a great deal that Cliff and I did a movie about, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was born when he had horse cavalry. When we went out and filmed the movie, and we were at the ranch, I saw it, and the ranch was very small, 1950s style building. I saw this picture on the wall that I'd never seen before. It was Ronald Reagan in the 1930s in a U.S. cavalry uniform, not from a movie, but from an Army Reserve unit. Reagan was in one of the last horse cavalry units in the U.S. Army as a reserve officer. He'd grown up. He was born before motion pictures had sound. He went to Hollywood when Technicolor was brand new. He evolved into television, which had not existed. And he spoke to the nation about the explosion of a space shuttle and the death of a teacher in space. All in one lifetime. And so he believed that you ain't seen nothing yet. I would say to every young person here tonight, we will be back. We will rebuild the country we love. And we will save the planet. You ain't seen nothing yet.
Tell me that you- okay, folks, I couldn't help but to play that. I really wish that music in the background wasn't there. It's a little bit distracting, so, you know, you're out to focus on what's said. But, I just think that was a good clip to play, you know, and with what we were talking about, you know, what Kelly was talking about, you know, about the American people and about America.
Oh, that was just really inspiring. It inspired me. I hadn't heard that.
And that's why, you know, and when I say the method to my madness, is that I believe that we could have another shot of having that man be the president of the United States.
Are you telling me that he might run again?
I'm not saying he might run again, but I think that if we have enough folks out there, you know, show him that, hey, you know, we would get behind him and, you know, and be boosting the ground for the campaign. And one of those ways is I get to get the link and put it on my website is to help pay down the debt from the 2012 election. That's one way that would, you know, that would show Newt that, you know, hey, we want him and we need him to run again in 2016. I think that, you know, with us not getting the opportunity because of the RNC and the Republican establishment, you know, perhaps after the law, you know, the rules, if the rules get changed in the RNC meeting this coming up, this coming up summer, August 16th, 14th to the 16th. But I think that's what I said earlier when James was on. It's time to get the organization now. It's time to get things rolling now. Get the train rolling now so that, you know, by the time it gets to the 2016 election, I mean, you know, the train will be up and running full steam. And I think it's very important to start things early. Now, you were going to say, Cindy, I didn't want to interrupt you, but go ahead.
I was going to say something, but I got to thinking about something else and then forgot it. Hang on, it'll come back to me in a minute.
Sure, you know, and I, you know, so I think it's, you know, when we lost the opportunity to have Newt Gingrich be the president, and I truly feel, and I truly think that if, you know, Newt Gingrich would have been to have that opportunity to run against Obama, he would have beaten him. I mean, he would have so slaughtered him in the debates and had such a stark contrast to Obama, unlike Romney, then I think he could have defeated him. So I think, you know, with that loss of that opportunity, we lost the national treasure and an opportunity to get Newt Gingrich. And I think we need someone like him, or not like him, to run in 2016. Now, of course, folks like, you know, bring up this or that, or, oh, well, what about Ted Cruz? What about Rand Paul? You know, things of that nature. Well, now those folks, in my opinion, or even in Ellen West, would be a great running mate with Gingrich, because I think it would give them the opportunity to gain much-needed experience as the vice president, because they still are, you know, relatively, you know, young, you know, politicians. I'm not necessarily talking about age. But, you know, I think they would be able to get the experience, you know, in the executive, you know, especially, you know, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. I mean, those are legislative positions, not executive positions. So, you know, most of, you know, Ronald Reagan was a governor, executive position. So it would be good to have that kind of experience, you know, with that, you know, as being the vice president for, you know, a Newt Gingrich candidacy. So I think it's important to have the discussion and bring it out now. And as I said, get folks together, maybe, you know, help with, you know, I got to get some things together, you know, put on the website, help with the debt. And if that can get paid down, if folks can help pay that down, they could show Newt that, hey, look, well, you know, we're ready to get behind you and support you once again. Because here's the thing. A lot of people are already talking about Hillary being at least running from the primary, if not ending up being the candidate, which I could see that happening, for the Democrats. Well, you know, he beat Hillary once. I'm not saying politically, you know. But he beat the Clintons, you know, before, and I think Newt could beat the Clintons again. And so, you know, not necessarily that, oh, hey, she definitely will be, but I can't see anybody else that the Democrats really would put up. I don't see them putting Biden up. I really don't. I don't see Biden running for president.
No. I mean, what a record he's got. No, but I think Robert, what I was going to say was, I think it's going to be a case kind of like George Washington, where I don't think he really wants to run again. So I think if he does run again, it's going to be because a whole lot of people popped him into it.
Well, there's one thing I want to say about Newt Gingrich is his ability to communicate and get people laughing is just absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would hate to be in a debate with him. He would just, oh my gosh, he would tear me to shreds, you know?
So, I mean, that's
You know, some people start getting in a word war with me, and I'm a published author, and I just rip them to shreds. And I just say, hey, never get involved in a verbal war with a published author. And I got little subtleties and things like that that people are just laughing around me. It happened the other night, long story. But, you know, I said two words, and the guy was just totally embarrassed. And, you know, I put him in his place. But, you know, Newt was like 10 times that. It's just like him against Obama. Oh, my gosh. I mean, Robert's starting to get me to be, well, I'm already a Newt Gingrich fan. But, you know, there is a new candidate on people are already going for Rand Paul. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. He's not his father. I don't know, guys. He sold out to endorse Romney, you know, and it was such a lame endorsement. If you watch his actions and the subtleties, yeah, I'm doing this the first career. That had a real, like, sour taste in my mouth. So, I don't know. I hope the Republican committee gets, the Rules Committee gets things straightened out because they're trying to snuff out the grassroots.
Yes. And I think that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and all those guys are people who could be trained or educated into being a sort of a Newt Gingrich type, but they aren't there yet. And so, yes, they would make a good running mate. But Newt is the one with the brain. He's the one with the knowledge. He's the one with the ability. He's the one that could do it. These other people, yeah, they have integrity and they have a desire to save America. They're on the ball. They're willing to work and do whatever it takes. But there's something that Newt Gingrich has, thinking on his feet, he can also be, and, you know, they always tear into him and say, oh, he's too undisciplined. He's gonna lash out at some diplomat when he shouldn't or something. No. When Newt wants to be, he can be diplomatic. We saw that in his gracious, you know, confession to Romney, and by the fact that he actually continued to campaign for mm-hmm. Romney, even though the Romney campaign had done him so badly, he still wanted a Republican in the White House. He did not let he did not get vindictiveness in his heart. He didn't feel like he had to get even with Romney or ostracize him like the other candidates did. Okay, he actually stayed with the Republican push to get a Republican president. However, I do have this one thing against him.
Well, I want to go into type. Type.
What's that, Kelly? Said,
type. You know, this lady was mentioning type. Newt Gingrich
Yes.
is a certain type. Well,
yes.
That type doesn't come from just, it just happened.
Yes.
People figure out our natural rights, the natural laws, and then all of a sudden, they discover the Constitution, acknowledge our natural rights. And so there are many good candidates, if you will. Then you get the elements of persuasiveness, connectedness, unity. I mean, Gingrich definitely had it all, or has it all. And the type, I hope we can find a type in the next presidential election, the type of person that we've just been describing. And, you know, Newt Gingrich is an excellent example, and he's really brought up the youth, too. So if we're fortunate, we will have a type that we will all be happy with.
Yeah, and I, you know, I like a lot about Rand Paul. He did indeed endorse Mitt Romney. He went ahead and did that. And I actually, just as a reminder for folks, and we got a little bit of time for this, and then I'll play this clip, then we'll do some closing remarks. But this is actually, you know, what Rand Paul's endorsement was of Romney.
Back to Hannity, and during the spirited Republican primary this election season, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul was out on the trail campaigning for his father, Texas Congressman Ron Paul. But tonight, he is here to make a major announcement about 2012 and the presidential race. And we welcome back to the program Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Sir, how are you?
Hey, good to see you, Sean.
All right. First of all, before you say what I think you're going to say, did you check in with your congressman father? Presidential candidate, well, I guess officially finally dropped out of the race.
Well, you know, my first choice had always been my father. I campaigned for him when I was 11 years old. He's still my first pick. But, you know, now that the nominating process is over, tonight I'm happy to announce that I'm going to be supporting Governor Romney.
Which it really wasn't ever.
Look, if you didn't support your father, by the way, I mean, I would really question family loyalty there. And I think it was totally understandable. And I know, you know what, you love and you respect your dad, and I agree with your dad on many issues. I have no idea why he's still mad at me, and he would reject coming on this program, but that's a whole different story for another day. How? Tell me why you're supporting Governor Romney.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that Governor Romney and I actually have quite a few similarities. You know, Governor Romney's dad ran for president, was unsuccessful. Governor Romney then went on to support the nominee the same way his dad did. Governor Romney comes from a big family. I don't know them that well, but I think it's a big, loving family. So do I. I come from a family with five kids. Governor Romney has five kids. He's had a long and happy marriage. So have my parents. I think we have a lot of the same family values and trust and feeling of the importance of the family unit. And so that, I think, draws a kinship between our families. But I met with him recently. I had about a 30-minute meeting with him. He was nice enough to meet with me when he was in Washington recently. And we talked about a lot of issues. It was a free-ranging discussion. And we talked about issues, frankly, that are important to me, that are important to my dad and to many of his followers. And many of these, you know, Governor Romney's already taken a position on. One of the big issues for our supporters, for myself and my dad, is auditing the Fed. We think there needs to be more transparency to the Fed and more oversight by Congress. And this is something that Governor Romney was supportive of throughout his campaign and also was supportive of in private to me. We talked about other issues that are important to my dad's followers. My dad has a legion of young followers who are on the Internet, and they think they rule the Internet, and maybe they do, maybe they don't, but they're very concerned about the freedom of the Internet. There's been legislation recently, SOPA, that Governor Romney came out in the debates and was opposed to this SOPA, which would take away some of the process of ownership on the Internet, and we were very afraid that it would limit Internet freedom, and Governor Romney's right there with us on those issues also. So I think there's a lot of kinship on those issues. Another big issue for me is the RAINS Act. I'm the chief sponsor in the Senate on a bill that would say that any major regulation, and I think we've got so much over-regulation now, but any major rule or regulation that would cost the economy over $100 million should have to come back and be voted on in Congress. Yeah. And Governor Romney's right there with me on that issue. So I think we have a lot in common, a lot of things that we will be able to fight together on.
But, Senator, two issues you didn't mention, that I believe this is a choice election. And on Obamacare, there is one major difference.
Romneycare.
Even on issues of spending, even though maybe you don't agree that, for example, the Ryan plan goes fast enough. I know you support and you've signed on to the Mac Penny plan. I hope that goes through. Governor Romney, when I asked him about it, seemed pretty intrigued by the idea. But when it comes to fiscal responsibility, Obamacare, there are vast differences here. Do you think this country could afford four more years of Obama?
No. I mean, my state is really suffering. We stand to lose 50,000 jobs in the coal industry if President Obama continues. I think one thing that Governor Romney would make as a president is he would bring a more balanced approach to regulation. We're going to have some regulation. Some regulation actually protects the environment. But President Obama's allowed the tilt and the balance to go so far that he's crushing the economy now and crushing jobs. And I think Governor Romney would have a more balanced approach to regulation.
Well, energy in general.
We sorely need that. Excuse me?
Yeah, energy in general, Senator. I mean, he's for all the above. He'll start drilling immediately, and he's been very clear about that. Those 50,000 jobs you mentioned in Kentucky, and we can go to West Virginia, and we can go to other places, and fracking and all these other things. He's in support of all these things, which we all know that President Obama is not.
Well, you know, the energy industry, the oil and gas industry, employs 9.2 million people and pays $86 million a day in taxes. And I want to encourage them to produce more oil and gas in our country. These are good American jobs. These are jobs that can't be outsourced. Energy jobs are great for our country. And I know Governor Romney will allow the Keystone Pipeline to occur. I know that he will encourage the oil and gas industry, and he won't say, oh, this is terrible that corporations make money. That's the kind of attitude that's making companies want to go overseas. We need to encourage companies right. to stay and come back to America, not leave the country.
You are very well loved in the Tea Party movement. Will you go out on the campaign trail for Governor Romney?
Yes, and I think that I can be an asset in solidifying the conservative base of the party, but I also think that myself, my father, and the movement that he started attracts a lot of independents also. So a lot of these young people aren't necessarily the conservative base.
All right.
But, you know, in my discussions with Governor Romney, I brought forward exactly what I believe, and that's that you and I have had this discussion before, that there should be checks and balances, that the right to declare war starts with the legislature, that it's important that we separate these powers. And we had a very good and, I think, honest discussion about a lot of these things. And I came away from it feeling that he will be a very responsible commander-in-chief. I don't think he'll be reckless. I don't think he'll be rash. And I think that he realizes and believes, as I do, that war is the last resort and something that we don't rush willy-nilly into. And I came away feeling that he'll have mature attitude and beliefs towards foreign policy.
All right, Rand Paul, I think it's a big endorsement coming from you, and we'll be looking for you out on the campaign trail. And as always, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Sean.
And coming up, a busy night tonight.
Now, I, I like, a lot of things about Rand Paul, but one thing I think he could have done to improve the chances of conservatism and actually the defeat of Obama was to, instead of endorsing Romney, was to fight with a lot of us in getting a brokered convention.
Well, absolutely. Robert, I agree there, but, there's something going on in the sense that the two main political parties have a monopoly, even together with the presidential debates. You have, if you want to be the best thing for America, you're stuck with two parties. You have to go with the R's or the D's, the elephant or the donkeys, and I confuse the two, but maybe Rand was, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe he was pretending so that he could do the best for America, because there's a game. Here's the rules. We set it up. I mean, I don't know. It's frustrating to see Rand do that, but maybe that's what he had to do for the best interest of America. It'd be unfrustrating, but of course, that's another reason why I'm libertarian, is I'm tired of the people who make up the rules so that only two parties govern. I mean, I'm just,
But here's the thing. Can I say something here?
Yeah, go ahead, Cindy, and then we'll deal with Holly, and we'll have to do closing thoughts, and then I'll have to close things out. Go ahead.
He made that endorsement too soon. He would have waited. That was before the convention, wasn't it?
Yes.
Sounded like it was. Well, that was the very wrong time to be endorsing somebody when there was all those Ron Paul people trying to force a broker convention. There was Newt Gingrich people all over the place still trying to work for and according to Barbara Haney, she said we came that close to having the vote. And
mm-hmm.
I think that if we had had some help from people who endorsed Ron too soon, yeah, for instance, the Right to Life, the National Right to Life, endorsed him too soon.
Well, there's a lot of background noise somewhere.
Yeah, Rand Paul endorsed him too soon. A lot of people threw their threw their support behind him before we had.
Yeah, I was very disappointed in National Right to Life, especially since Romney's record for that
exactly.
on that.
Exactly. I don't understand what. I read the article where they were explaining why they were giving him their endorsement. And on the front, on the cover, it talked about how we were going by his record. So I said, oh, Romney has a record on abortion that's conservative somewhere that I missed? What did I miss? So I went back in there and I tore into the article and started reading. The record they're talking about is just what he claimed, what he said
mm-hmm.
out of his mouth. There's no vote. There's no policy decisions. There's no repeal of anything. There's nothing to suggest that he would have been a pro-life president, and yet they endorsed him. That was a big
right.
mistake. That
but
was a big mistake.
Time, yeah, it's definitely time to move forward and and look toward. I know a lot of folks, and I agree, want to focus on, 2013, 14, and then, move on to 16, and there's plenty of people to focus on 2013, 2014. But I'm looking further into that and looking at 2016. So, Holly, if you've got any parting thoughts before we get ready to take a minute from everyone for closing up the show, go ahead.
I'm just of the mindset that the place we're at right now in America, it's not the America I grew up in, and it's not because of the color of Obama's skin or anything like that. It's just that his policies, our Second Amendment's under attack, our First Amendment's under attack, got the IRS targeting people. He gets away with blatantly lying to the American people about a 9/11 attack. So I think there's bigger problems going on right now. But what I wanted to say, Robert, to you, I just wanted to thank you very much for getting in touch with James and getting the word out about what he's doing with the overpasses for Obama's impeachment. I just want to thank you very much for doing that tonight.
Well, you're welcome.
And it was
thank
very,
very
nice
much.
To meet. I think it's his name is Kelly. It was nice to meet you on here.
Great. Thank you very much, Holly, for coming to the show. And, of course, you're always welcome to come again. And, Kelly, if you want to give us a minute, and then I'll go ahead and then send you a minute, and then I'll close out the show. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, I was just if there's any, you know, closing thoughts, you know, so we just got about a minute for any kind of closing thoughts. Or we can pass it over to Cindy.
Well, what's absolutely beautiful is the spirit of liberty is alive and well. And your callers again and again keep discussing how powerful this is. And we got to keep sticking together and growing in numbers and do what we can.
Yeah, strength in numbers.
Exactly. And that's actually, James just messaged me on Facebook just moments ago. And says it'll take an army of us. It'll take an army of us. And he also thanked everyone and said it was a lot of fun and educational as well. Go ahead, Cindy.
No, I'm just absolutely, and I agree with all of that. And we do, but we can't. Yes, we do have to look forward and move to the future, but we cannot forget the mistakes of the past.
Agree.
Do. And we do need to keep bringing it up from time to time. Not that we have to dwell on it.
Right. No, I agree.
We do have to keep light on the past.
Right.
Say,
for those who do not learn from the past or didn't repeat it. Right.
Right. And so, yes, we can't dwell on it too much because we have work to do for the future. But no, we can't ignore it. Stuff it in a box somewhere and put it up, you know, like the Indiana Jones Ark, you know, getting thrown way back in the back somewhere.
Right.
Or, you know, the government storage. You can't do that. Newt is the perfect example of somebody who knows how to take history and use it to our benefit. And, gosh, we got to get
what?
Newt.
And I agree, and I think that was very well said and a great ending for tonight's show. I want to thank everyone. Thank everyone here on the call and those who participated in chat and those also who participated there on Facebook. It's great to have everyone on, and it'd be great to have you back. And for those who listen on the archive, thank you very much, and please share the link with other folks as well as come visit us on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page and group here on Facebook, and check out the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And thank you very much. Have a good night, and I will end tonight as I do every night, and that will be with the song from Aubrey Ashburn, where you can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com, and that's AubreyAshburn.com. And thank you much again. Good night, and take care.
Good night. God bless.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.